Chairperson, thank you. I'm just gonna, for the benefit of the committee, I'll again go through the policy imperatives related to why we have adopted Section 8 the way we have, and then the stakeholder advisor will then go into the issues around the legality and the constitutionality of Section 8 because that was raised as a concern. As I said previously, we have revised Section 8 of the Act because practice tells us that the way that the Act is currently drafted, Section 8 of the Act as it currently drafted, it provides for a list of property categories and it allows municipalities to determine those property categories, but it gives them a lot of wide-ranging discretion on how to determine those property categories. If you read Section 8, especially 8.2, it says categories of rateable property that may be determined by a municipality include the following. It lists a whole list of various categories of property, which in practice allows municipalities to determine, but they may also determine additional property categories to the ones that are actually listed. That is what actually happens in practice. Sometimes the additional property categories that are determined by municipalities are subsets of the property categories that you see listed here. For example, there will be business and commercial properties, but there will be a subset of business and commercial properties that will read business and commercial property 1, business and commercial property 2, up to whatever number. And they will all have little differences, small differences between them, but they include those differences and they are then able to apply a different rate to business and commercial property based on those subcategories that they determine. So you won't have one rate for business and commercial properties, for example, and rebates and so on, but you'll have many different business categories. That for us is very, it creates problems because it's not transparent, it's not clear who is really business one and business two, what are the differences. It's not always clear in the rate policies what the difference between business one, business two, business three, and so forth is. So it's not clear to us as national government to see what exactly municipalities are doing. It's also not clear to the property owners because they don't know where they fall in, and they also don't know why they fall within those various business categories. So our view is that for transparency's sake, municipalities should be able to determine categories of property which are clear and unambiguous so that everybody knows that this is business and commercial property. It doesn't, what we're proposing doesn't stop municipalities from coming up with rebates, reductions, and so on based on their rate policy. And as long as there is a clear criteria for determining those rebates and criteria, then everything is absolutely fine. So it doesn't stop them from doing that. So to that end, we've amended Section 8 to, as we said, to improve transparency, to make it clear what exactly the property categories are, to also assist us as national government to be able to monitor compliance, because we can't see currently clearly whether municipalities are complying with the Act as far as determining the categories, but also as far as applying rates to different categories of property. So what we're doing are going to assist us to be able to monitor effectively ourselves, and also I think it will assist Parliament as well in their oversight role, because Parliament will be able to see more clearly exactly what the category of property is, and be able to interpret what the rebates that are applied to that property category is. So that is all that we're doing in this regard. So if you look at the proposed Section 8, which is on page 5, clause 6 of the Act, you'll see that in Section 8.1, we don't change much. The only thing that we have removed is a geographic location as a basis for determining property. This is something that municipalities are comfortable with, in fact. Having debated with municipalities, they're comfortable with applying use and permitted use as a basis for categorization. There's no issue with the geographic location. All municipalities actually either, when they determine property categories, they determine them according to the use of the property. They go there, they look at what the property is used for, and then they apply a categorization, or they use the permitted use framework, which is really their town planning schemes. So they use either of those. So we've allowed for the continuation of the use and permitted use of the property to determine the property category, or a combination of the two. And now municipalities did indicate that they sometimes do use a combination of the two, use and permitted use, where applicable. So this framework gives them that leeway, authority to determine whether they want to use either or whether they want to use both. Moving to Section 8.2 as proposed, to deal with the challenges that I just laid out now about untransparency, I don't know whether untransparency is a word, but lack of transparency.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. The opaqueness of the property categorization as it currently is, we've actually provided that municipalities must determine a certain set of property categories. Those are the ones that we've listed in Section 8.2. Chairperson and members, if you look at those property categories in A up to I, you'll see that those are general property categories that you'll find in any locality. In any place you'll find residential properties, industrial properties, business and commercial, agricultural properties, mining properties you'll find in certain areas and not in others. Properties owned by organ of state and used for public service purposes. I will discuss that separately, by the way, because it's a new property category that we've created. You'll find PSI. You'll find properties that are owned by public benefit organizations. And you'll find properties that are used for multiple purposes. Those are standard properties that you will find in any municipality. In any municipality. So our view is that the municipalities must determine these property categories. If that category of property actually exists in that municipality. So if Cape Town is determining a set of property categories, it doesn't have to include mining because there is not a single mine in Cape Town as far as we know. So they're not forced to determine a category of property called mining. If they don't have public service infrastructure, Tshwane, for example, it doesn't have public service infrastructure in its valuation role because it does not value and rate public service infrastructure. So they're not forced to have that property category. So it's not a must to have a property category if you don't have it in your locality. That's why we've written it the way that we've written it. We've said a municipality must determine the following category of rateable property in terms of subsection 1, provided that such property category exists within the municipal jurisdiction. So that set of categories we would like to see for the purposes of monitoring, for the purposes of knowing exactly what those property categories are, and also to see what the rate applied to those property categories are, and to see what the rebates and exclusions are. Now, it doesn't stop there. There is a third part to Section 8, which is subsection 3 that we've provided for there. Before I go there, I need to say, initially when we published this bill, we had gone for only the property categories that you see in Section 8.2a because we were worried about this opaqueness of property categorization in municipality. So we had closed it to the property categories that are in 8.2. Having received public submissions from various parties which told us that we're being too stringent, we are not allowing for any discretion. We revised that position and we thought to ourselves, actually there is merit in what the public submissions are saying. And by the way, the majority of the public submissions that said we are being too stringent were from municipalities, INFO, SALGA, amongst others. So we accepted that we were probably being too stringent and we allowed for an opening up in such a way that the municipality can have further discretion to determine other property categories besides the ones that we've listed here, as long as that determination of the property categories doesn't actually go against the property categories that you have said they must determine in terms of Section 8.2. So we provided for that. That way we can also ensure that the objectives of why we're changing Section 8 are actually maintained so that things can still be transparent. We don't lose the transparency. We don't lose that ability to monitor and exercise, and for Parliament to exercise oversight over what actually is happening. We don't lose that, but we allow discretion. So if you look at subsection 3, it says that in addition to the categories of rateable property that are determined in terms of subsection 2, a municipality may, where appropriate, again, where appropriate, where there's a need to do that, determine additional categories of rateable property. Additional. Including vacant land. I'll tell you just now why vacant land is there. Provided that, with the exception of vacant land, the determination of such property categories does not circumvent the categories of a rateable property that must be determined in terms of subsection 2. So if there are, we recognize that there are differences in municipalities. There are sort of nuances that you'll find in terms of circumstances where you might find a certain property category which is unique and is not covered by the property category that we've listed in Section 8.2. So that municipality can determine that property category. When we say that the property categories must not circumvent 2, all we're saying is whatever is determined in terms of subsection 3 must not be, for example, a property category which is actually industrial property or agricultural property disguised as something else, meaning you're just trying to create another property category disguised as, say, industrial, so that you can apply a different rate to it for whatever reason. That way, then, the whole transparency principle completely goes out the window. Simply put the word circumvented. So I think that's just trying to ensure that the patents that I mentioned earlier does not continue. In terms of why we have said including vacant land, the Act as it currently is, and municipalities have been making submissions to us, they indicate that in certain instances they're basically getting legal challenges in terms of when they determine a property can be called vacant land. When they determine it, they're approached by property owners who say, no, but there's a list of property categories in Section 8. Vacant land is not one of them. You're not allowed to determine a vacant land property category. So they appealed with us, and they asked us to please ensure that there is a property category called vacant land that we that we provide for. The reason we provided for it is subsection 8.3, is because when you look at all of the property categories that are in 2, if it's a property that is zoned residential or is categorized residential or industrial or business and so forth, it, if possible, they can find such a property but which is vacant. So we put it in subsection 2 so that that can be differentiated from the rest of the residential, commercial, industrial and agricultural properties, so that it can be differentiated as specifically being vacant, despite the fact that it's a residential property or an industrial property, and so forth. We've also provided in section 8, because we foresee that, look, we have determined the list of property categories, and although we've given discretion for municipalities to add other property categories as long as they don't go against these ones, there may be a need for the addition of property categories in Section 8.2. So we have provided that in J, in Section 8.2J, we said any other category of property may be added and may be determined by the Minister with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance through a note in the Gazette. This means that if we, in terms of our monitoring and assessment, notice that actually there should ideally be another property that could be included in Subsection 8.2, or if a municipality thinks that there should be, they can also initiate the process to alert us to add that property category. So it's open. It's open to addition to, in terms of Subsection 8.2, it's not completely closed. So that provision, we said that it can be demand-driven, it can be initiated by the municipality, and on good cause, another property category can be added to Section 8.2, or if we ourselves, as the Ministry and the Department, see from monitoring that actually there's a need to add another property category, let's add it here. The other key thing that I want to say about Section 8, which is which must be noted, is that by and large, you'll see that all these property categories are driven by the use of the property. The property categories that are currently in Section 8, there are a number of them which are driven by ownership. Now, if you determine a property category based on ownership, you create inequities in the system. I'll tell you why. If I am a private person and I own a residential property, for example, and the state owns a residential property, what it will mean is that the state's property, by virtue of being owned by the state, can have a different rate applied to it than a residential property which is owned by a private person such as myself. Now that's inequitable. It makes sense. If two residential properties are sitting next to each other, they should ideally have the same rate applied to them. It shouldn't matter who owns it, ideally. Except maybe in the case where we're talking about rebates and exemptions for the elderly, people on grants and so forth. But when those poverty issues, you know, do not have any impact on the residential property, there's no need to have two rates applying to that. So when you have a property categorization that is driven by ownership, you introduce inequities in the system, you treat people unfairly. What ordinarily happens is that the municipality will most certainly apply a higher rate to the state-owned property, which is residential, than the residential property, which is owned by a private person, because the state is really generally seen as a cash cow. We all know that everybody thinks that the state has a chest of money, which is a bottomless pit, so they'll apply a high rate to that. So we engage with municipalities about the ownership as a basis for property categorization, and we all agree that ownership isn't appropriate. Every property should be categorized according to use. So regardless of whether the residential property is owned by the state or owned by me, they are both residential properties and they should be rated the same way. So you'll see that all of these property categories are determined on the basis of use. Chairperson, I must speak about two property categories, the one in F and the one in H. One in F is termed properties owned by an organ of state and used for public service purposes. This is a new property category that we have determined. The reason we've done that is that we see a need to recognize that the state is expending a lot of financial resources in localities, in municipal spaces, to ensure that there are clinics, there are hospitals, there are police stations, and the like, courts of law and the like, so that these services can be accessible to the people. Now, our view is that these properties should be rateable. They should pay rate like any other property category, yes. However, we must recognize them specifically as a property category. If we don't, then we treat it like any other business property. And they're not business. They are providing services not for a profit. They're providing services at cost. And I'll just say, let's recognize them, let's create a property category in recognition of that. So if you go to the definition, you'll see that we have determined a property category that is, let me see what page. Yeah, it's called public service purposes. It's on page 4 in the definition. I'll read it so that you can see exactly what it refers to. It doesn't refer to all state properties. And the reason that ownership forms part of the determination of that property category is because we have to recognize the state properties to differentiate them from others. There are other players in the market who provide hospital services, you know that, private hospitals, there are private clinics, and so forth. We want to make sure that we are able to determine the difference between them. Public service purposes, in terms of the definition, it says in relation to the use of property, even though the ownership comes in here, use is still the driver of the property categorization. In relation to the use of the property means property owned and used by an organ of state for the rendering of the following services directly to the public. We're only recognizing those that provide services direct to the public. Hospitals and public clinics, schools, including preschools, early childhood development centers, and further education and training colleges, libraries, police stations, prisons, or courts of law. Obviously, it excludes public service infrastructure because that's a different category of property. The other property category where we have put an element of ownership because we have to, because these are owned by specific organs, is property category H, which is properties owned by public benefit organizations and used for specified public benefit activities. This is not a new category of property. If you look at the current act, you'll see that that property category is there. We haven't added it, we've just retained it. And we're retaining it because our view is that there is no need for it to be dropped and that these property categories need to be continue to be recognized. We're not changing any policy in that regard. That property category is, by the way, defined in the Act. The specified public benefit activities are already defined in the Act now, as the Act is currently drafted. Chairperson, I'm going to stop here. In our view, look, I'm going to move it over to Harriet, who will tell us about the legality and constitutionality. But before she comes in, our view is that despite what the municipalities have admitted, we have provided for discretion. Initially, we were very, very tight about Section 8. We said it's a must. You must determine these property categories. There are no other property categories that can determine. But we have revised our view, we have taken into account their concerns, and we've engaged with municipalities about the concerns that they raise, and we've engaged with them about the concessions that we are making to recognize their concerns. And we've discussed subsection 3 with them. In fact, when we discussed subsection 3 with them, they are the ones that added vacant land because they saw a need for that. And although they don't agree with the way Section 8 is drafted, our view is that it still allows for municipal discretion. And you can see that municipal discretion in 8 subsection 3. Harriet, I think you can talk about the legality and constitutionality.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Honourable Members. Let me take you through Section 8. And but before we start, I think we need to look at the intended purpose of this legislation, the bill before us. We amending this bill to ensure that there's accountability, and we wanted to make sure that the government is more effective in their monitoring and reporting mechanism. Those are the issues that this bill seeks to achieve. And we want to ensure that this legislation is clear, it's very precise, there are no ambiguities, and it's not open to various interpretations. We want to make sure that it is clear. And colleagues, when you, honorable members, when you look at, I'm sorry about that. When you look at the intended purpose of Section 8, we're promoting uniformity. We're saying it should be transparent and accountable, and municipalities have to be accountable. And we're taking into account the constitutional rights that the municipalities have. We do not have any intention of impinging or encroaching on any constitutional rights that is embedded within our constitution to give municipalities powers and function. We are not encroaching on that. When you look at the previous section, I think on section 8.2, the previous section had a must, and it had a may. It said a municipality may determine the following categories. But now we have taken away the may and put it and make it very prescriptive. And if you look at section 229B, 229.2B of our constitution, I think there's a constitutional case on the ratification of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And in that case, they are saying, I'll read to you, that in terms of section 229B of the Constitution, the REIT Act is limited to regulating the power of a municipality to impose rates on a property. The Constitutional Court has accepted that the ordinary meaning of the word regulate connotes a broad meaning of controlling, a broad managing or controlling rather than direct authorization of the function. So we're not impeding on any powers of the municipalities. We just manage it. We are saying that there are the categories that we want the municipality to have so that there is the intended purpose of the legislation should always kick in. There should be an effective monitoring and reporting mechanism. The department has to be in a position where they are aware of what the municipality are reaching on. And secondly, the rationale for Section 8. I think what we need to do also is to look at the powers and function. The powers and function of the municipality, as prescribed in Section 516 of our Constitution. I'll go through it again so that we... It clearly states that the municipality have the executive and authority and have the right to administer. And after saying that, we go into Section 1557 of the Constitution, where it tells you that we appreciate that there is powers and functions of the municipalities. But the national government and the provisional government have a legislative and executive authority
to see to the effective performance by municipality of their function in respect of matters listed in Schedule 4. So here, Chairperson, what this explains is that we have rights, we have functions that are embedded in the Constitution to afford to the municipalities. But those rights, the national department, through legislative mechanism, they can be able to regulate. And is the regulation prescriptive? No, it's not prescriptive in this manner. We're only saying that these are the categories that are here, and your discretion as a municipality is not in any way invaded. It is still here. You look at Section 3, they say, Section 8, you can place any additional category that you feel that you require to put in this legislation. So it is, the discretion is still upheld. What we need to do is just to manage, to ensure that there's compliance and accountability in this one. And if you look at Section 292, it says that the powers of a municipality to impose rates on property, surcharges on seasons, is provided by or on behalf of the municipality taxes or duties, may not be exercised in a way that materially and unreasonably prejudices in national economic policy. And B, thereof, it says that it may be regulated by national legislation. So what we seek to do is just to ensure that there's proper management and there is legal certainty. You know, we're promoting the legal certainty in a manner that we would know what, and we're not only doing, we would know what other provinces or what other municipalities are doing. And we're not even applying a blanket approach. This is not a blanket approach. We know that municipalities, we are diverse in so many ways in this country. So the municipality, the national department does not seek to take any discretion away from this regulation, from this bill. And one other aspect is that I think yesterday we dealt with the residential properties, and I think it's safe to say that residential properties that we dealt with is in line with the Section 8 that we're dealing with today. And Chairperson, I'd like to finish here with my colleagues who want to say something to add further to that, but it's to say that we are not prescriptive. We withstand our constitutional mandate to ensure that municipalities comply. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just maybe to refer the committee. To refer the committee to two cases that are of a similar nature, where local government is of the view that the national government is interfering in its domain. The cases, Chairperson, don't necessarily involve property rights, but the principle is the same. There was a case that involved the Umvoti municipality in KZN, where the person that got appointed didn't have a big degree, because there was an amendment in the Citizens Act that said an NM must have a big degree if a prescriptive. Now, this particular candidate was of the view that that particular provision is limiting the power of a municipality. What if a person doesn't have the big degree? So the matter was before court. The court was very clear in saying there are two rights that need to be weighed. There's a public interest around local government, and if you take into account the state of local government, and also the right of the individual. Now, if local government says to minister, you cannot prescribe the big degree to us, give us the duty as local government because we are the minister will be ignoring his power to ensure good governance as local government. So there's a shift in courts to entertain more the issue of public interest more than the autonomy of local government. The courts are not necessarily married to the idea that a local government is autonomous. There's a shift to what the courts see as a problem practically in society. and they are of the view that if the minister can justify that this is why I'm limiting this particular right of local government, then they do not necessarily have a problem. The second case, Chairperson, is a case that involved in Mbazane municipality versus the MC of KZN. If Mbazane wanted to appoint again a person who didn't have the qualification, and the recent amendment to the Systems Act says if you appoint a person who doesn't qualify, the MEC can apply to court and declare that appointment null and void. So the very same principle of interference arose even in that case. Even that particular court took a similar decision to say, look, the state of local government is such that it needs to be regulated. And the minister would really be ignoring his or her function if he were to allow people who don't qualify to be appointed at MM, taking into account the state of local government. So I'm just raising that as a principle check, so that when the committee is deliberating, to understand that there's a shift in courts on the emphasis is no longer on the autonomy of local government, but the autonomy now, the emphasis now is on public interest. Whatever the minister is doing, is it in the interest of the public? Is the aim at good government? Is it going to benefit the society? So that is the shift of the emphasis now. Thanks.
Madam Chair, I can just maybe add to what was being said. I mean, if you look at Section 229.2b, it's true that the competence to regulate property rights lies with national. And as my colleague Harriet has said, there is a constitutional court case that says that the word regulate means broad managing or controlling rather than direct authorization. So this regulatory power that national has is limited to the setting of a framework. And so in exercising this regulatory function, Parliament may impose limitations provided they do not extend beyond what is framework legislation. And in the description then, which compromises or impedes the municipality discharging its powers or performing its functions, would then be inconsistent with Section 151.4 of the Constitution, which says the national or provincial government may not compromise or impede a municipality's ability or right to exercise its power. So what I just want to say is that Clause 8 must therefore be looked at, I think, from the following perspective. I need to establish what is the intention. As we've heard, the intention of Clause 8 is to provide some uniformity and some transparency by setting this list of properties in respect of which differential rates may be applied. The second question one then needs to look at is whether the setting of these categories fall within national power to regulate. In other words, does it go beyond the power of setting a framework? And then the third one is, will the manner in which this framework be set, does it then impede on the municipality's power to regulate? And once you apply those three questions to Clause 8, one is then able to determine if it's too prescriptive or not.
I think it's necessary also to bring to the committee's attention, following also a larger presentation last week by the people from the developed estate, something about it, so that when the committee deliberates on this matter, it takes that into account. That is the notion of a privately owned town serviced by the owner, because it also falls within the service. So whatever amendments are made, it needs to take that issue into account. In this sense, in terms of the current Act, Section 8 of the Act, which within the Amendment Act holds in the same style, it says that already is 8 subsection 1, it says that subject to Section 19, a municipality may, in terms of the criteria set out in the race, politically different, blah, 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 blah. So the issue is there is a relationship between Section 8 and Section 19. So these two sections have to be looked in tenders, because if you narrowly look on Section 8, then you may run into problems in terms of Section 19. Now, the problem which we have picked up after we listened, because we asked ourselves, how does it come that after that presentation was made when we tried to apply our manifesto, where they came with a catalogue to show some of the municipalities where you've got some of these things which are claiming that some of the municipalities, they put those services to themselves, as they claim that they have service level agreement with some of those municipalities, and so how that situation arose in the first instance if you look at Section 19. Because if you go to Section 19 again of the Act, it reads as follows. In terms of Section 19, Subsection 1, Subsection 8, it states that a municipality may not levy a rate, may not levy different rates on residential property, except as provided in certain sections, which I won't go into there. One of those is special renting areas. The other one was also to deal with transitional provision. So within the residential property category, Section 19, Subsection 8, Subsection 1A, it comes with the notion of intermunicipal separation. So you cannot within that particular sector, as long as properties either have been categorized through zoning or through use, that is a residential property category, treat that particular property category differently, which that notion of developed states, it started raising last week, because they said they have entered into a federal agreement with some of the municipalities in which, based on the fact that they have provided services, because they normally go to the edge of the town, provided services, for example, water and the like, then for municipalities either to give them relief measures by way of rebates, those kinds of things. Now, that is that, then we said if Section 19 is prohibiting, because that should not be in the first instance, it means that was illegal. Now, the offending thing which may have created problems, then I guess it may come to interpretation. It comes in Section 8, Subsection 2, and in J, in which states that categories of reasonable properties that may be determined in terms of Subsection 1 include the following J. So it appears that the Act as currently drafted may have created that, because when you go to Subsection 8, Subsection 1, it states within the residential property category, you will not have any differentiation. But when you come to those particular property categories, which were not mandatory because it was up to municipality, as one of the guys, for example, it came with the notion of this what is called privately owned town service by the owner. Now, what these residential property developers have done is to use the thing in dealing with some of the municipalities. So as we are seated here, we have, if what they were saying is true, and I got no reason to disapprove that, because in certain instances, there were some few examples of some municipalities in terms of how much relief they are giving the day on that. We have that motion, because what the Act had, it was, which was clearly thought out, it was the concept of the special rating area, as we explained last week, which is Section 22, I think it's 22 of the Act, that you can have an additional rating within a particular state, so that if everybody else is paying, for example, 1 cent, you can have those people paying 5 cents extra, because specific things have to be done. But in this particular thing, when you talk about developed states, it's the opposite, because all that it says is within this highly developed state, then if everybody is a residential property owner, paid 1 cent, those can be subject to something like 80 cents. So it's a sort of a regressive kind of a thing. So that is a thing which needs to be taken into account based on what the current Act created. Now, one option, and I'm raising this thing because we don't want, when the Act has to be implemented, that the rule things start coming up. Either the committee may make it clear that is prohibited, because if you take the amendment which has been presented before you, and it took the notice, because we didn't know that there was that kind of an arrangement which was in place existing, because basically, in my view, if the amendment bill is agreed to as it is, it will mean that that notion may fall off. I will have to suggest Constitution 3, which provides for a different category as to whether it can bring that element into here, but it can be. It will mean that it will be prohibited from happening, which may be the correct thing for that to happen. Or else, if we feel that because some of those legal agreements have been increased, let us prohibit the thing because it doesn't make sense to have that kind, because otherwise what you will have in the country over time is that within certain municipalities you will have privatization of certain geographical spaces where the municipality is not doing anything because it's based on those certain agreements, whether it's in perpetuity or for a limited time period. And the rating region won't be equitable because these particular people will pay a lower than amount in the rent based on the fact that the municipality is recognizing things. So if you look at the country going forward, is that policy-wise the kind of vision which policymakers need to have in place, that those are the things government through these legislations want to incentivize for those kinds of arrangements to continue. So one other thing, it might be to take it out, come with transitional provisions that in case of those municipalities which already have those kinds of arrangements, whether it takes them 3 years or 5 years to get out of those arrangements. So I'm just raising that element. So that is this other element that the country needs to take into account when we deal with this particular section. Honorable Smith, the other thing which you said yesterday when you talked about the comparison of municipalities, for example, when you mentioned it in the job is something, and we said there is something which is, yes, when you look at the definition of the ratio, that is how we try when we talk about transparency, and I will just quickly read it. We don't need to go into it. It says that the ratio in relation to section 19 means the relationship between the amount in the rent applicable to residential properties and non-residential properties, provided that the two relevant amounts in the rent are inclusive of any relief measures that amount to rebate of a general application to all properties within the property category. When we said sometimes it's not easy to say, so this is what we have typed it. So that when you say this is what it is for residential properties, it has to be based on the effective rate for that particular category. So you don't have the thing of comparing something with something, whereas there is something which amounts to the discount which is given to a residential property. So you take the net effect, which allows you to see what those things are. So that has been taken care of in order for that transparency to come out. So in a nutshell, that is what I wanted to bring to the committee's attention.
Thank you, Chair. I have a comment before me. I think the big issue here is going to be the May match. But before we get to that, there are a whole lot of other subsidiary issues. Maybe just about the last one raised by my colleague. I think the issue that McGrath was not that the ratio wasn't clear. McGrath was that why is this passion for uniformity that sees existing government and many committees in Parliament. If the passion for uniformity, why is this to allow a situation to obtain in which a residential property owner in Durban pays double the rates of Johannesburg, right? If you want uniformity, then you would try things like that. But you don't allow that situation to change, you want to regulate other issues. So to me, this is highly inconsistent. I'm not quite sure I understand the logic of it. I'm not saying sure we should do it, but if you want to be uniform, what determines what level of uniformity and when and where? On this issue of the privately owned farms, privately owned towns, it had nothing to do, because I said at the time when we wrote this bill, it had nothing to do at the time with gated estates whatsoever. It was the mining towns. Mm. The country was full of towns literally owned completely by the mines. The roads, the electricity, the shops, the pavements, the houses, the entire towns were owned by De Beers or owned by a coal mine. And the residents, the workers lived in there at either free or subsidized rates. That was what was being dealt with. Nothing to do with gated estates whatsoever. And the people are so stupid as to allow gated estates to use this as an exemption. Well, that's their own problem. I mean, they just, they need to be educated. Maybe they shouldn't be in charge of municipalities in the first place, without the law. So I don't know that that situation of a mining town, where the reality has changed, that it has to be dispensed with or not. the argument, as I understand it, is that you can't have any differentiation in residence rates. Therefore, you can't have a clause like that. But then it was put there specifically to deal with the problem of mining towns. So I don't know what the effect would be on a mining town were you to remove it. Simply that it serves a purpose. But we'll see. The issue of some, you know, what I don't understand in the new Act 1 as well, there's a whole lot of things, a lot of categories being removed. I mean, for example, J has been removed. What J? J is public citizens restricted. J is over public owned towns. Yeah, I'm sorry, to understand that one. M, state trust land. State trust land is quite a large component of land, of public infrastructure, public infrastructure, of state-owned land. I mean, in terms of entry, for example, alone, there are 600,000 hectares of state-owned trust land spread amongst all municipalities. So why would you remove it? Oh, it's particular areas. And maybe there's a reason for it. I'm not sure why that's gone. And K, what is K? K. Oh, formal and informal settlements. That's gone. I'm not quite sure I understand that either. So I'm not quite clear why some have gone completely. I don't know why some have gone from what information was up those. Then I started to talk, and then also a statement was made that the problem is you define the categories in terms of ownership. So just, you know, and what you're trying to do is avoid the ownership because the old, the unamended version of the Section 8 has too much ownership. I just did a quick scroll through it. And it's exactly the same. There are three categories in the old one dealing with ownership, and three of the new ones dealing with defining categories defined by ownership. So I can't see you change the thing, actually. Ownership is ownership. And I mean, the new one, for example, Section J is... No, not J, it's right. It's down here. The new one is F. F is properties owned by an organ of state. H is properties owned by deed laws. And D is, where is the G? Public open structures owned by public. So, I mean, they're all ownership defined. So, and then, Chair, I think what happens with the gate of the state, especially issues to the rule of J, the issue of the gate of the state goes back to a basic issue that's built, in fact, even the major constitution, is what is property rates? It's never been clear whether it's a wealth tax or it's a tax for services rendered. In fact, it's a wealth tax. I've always argued that. The department hated that terminology at the time. The committee went ballistic when I said that at the time, but it's true. That's all it is. It's a wealth tax. Therefore, if it's a wealth tax, then there's no link between the services you receive and the tax that's due to be paid. So if you're in a gated state and you do all your own services, tough luck. You're in a farm and you get housing in the municipality, tough luck. But the trouble is, although it's actually a wealth tax, the bill is full of provisions which don't quite make that. You know, so for example, we have the whole 1.25 ratio of farms based on only the fact that it's the level of services received and things like that. That's a tax expressly in bill. So there's a kind of inconsistency there. So how do you deal with gates of the state in relation to that? I really don't know. If this bill is, if we wanted to be completely honest with ourselves and make a wealth tax, to say so, then you just think like gates of the state will problem all the way. There's always this residual vestige of people thinking you're paying for services of some kind with rates. And then of course you've got the problem saying, well, I don't get services, then why do that myself? Then why do I pay plenty of people to, you know, get everything for nothing, or differently. But Chair, the big issue, I think, is the main must. And I must say, on here, I'm not yet convinced by the discussions put forward by the department. Because if it's such a fundamental issue, and the basis of the argument seems to me, apart from the desire for uniformity, which is a bizarre one, is the notion that there's a lack of transparency in the way things are done at present. But I've seen it, and maybe I missed the public hearing, maybe you presented a strong case and showed municipality A is doing X and municipality B is doing Y, and this is a big problem. If I missed that, I'm sorry. But I haven't seen what the problem is. So the statement to say is there's a lack of transparency in the categorization of residential or business rates. And everybody should be paying the same residential. As soon as you have residential 1 and residential 2 and residential 3, and they're not transparent, it's a problem. I don't understand the problem yet. I'd like to see what the problem is. So what I would like would have been for you to have presented to us a clear picture of the problem empirically. What are the municipalities doing, and why is that a problem, and why necessary to remedy it? A statement that is not transparent to me is not enough, as we stand. I don't know whether the legal argument that the municipality is putting forward, that it's in fact over-regulated, is true or not. The easy answer, unfortunately, is that they're probably wrong, but I wish they were right, because I suspect that the law will be on your side. But that doesn't mean it's right, it just means you're probably win a court case. But be that as it may, I think one has to pay a lot of respect to the principle of the constitutional limited legal authority, and whether, this discretion is diminished severely or not, and whether the courts rule one way or the other, it's definitely true that you are diminishing fairly significantly the power of the municipality to determine its rates. Whether it's a little or not is another issue, but you certainly are. There's no point saying it's just a minor amendment. It's a major amendment. It's a major infringement of the relative autonomy of municipality. It may be legally possible. That's fine. It's another issue. But I don't think it's minor. And I think Sauda and some of the municipalities have written in and complained. I think so. On good grounds. I mean, they have a certain rate policy, a refresh rate, which works for them when you're taking it away. Never mind, they've also won, or they would have won, if they got the rate case. It wasn't just a question of that government won those cases. On rates, the whole thing had to be dropped, precisely because municipalities' powers would have been diminished too severely. I'm not saying that pays with Trump anything else, but still. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. I agree with the Honourable Smith. I'm still battling to see what the problem is. Maybe I've got a veil over my eyes, but I can't see what the problem is, why we're having to go down to that. I also just want to deal with the issue of accountability. I don't really hash a lot of the points that Honourable Smith made, so I agree with him. But accountability in this level lies with the municipality. The municipality part of the rates policy, which is determined sort of the... And should even the accountability is... elected representative at a local government level, who are directly elected by the citizens. So if there's an unhappiness with rate policies, citizens of local government, more than any other sphere, have an ability to vote out councils that they believe are doing the wrong thing and replace them with councils that are doing the right thing. I just really need you guys to take me through where the problem lies, because I can't see exactly where it is. In terms of the Constitution, I have a different perspective. I think that we can't look at constitutional clauses in isolation. I think that in Banya case said that they have to be looked at in terms of the whole Constitution. But I think that any constitutional interpretation needs to be looked at with the sections around local government, particularly the schedule. But one of the cases put forward by the municipality, I think it was Esigweni, was the Nell case, Blom, for Tivchane. Well, they say that the court has affected the rights of the municipality to determine the category of property. Has that case been looked at in your analysis of the bullet? Maybe like the Mokaka case yesterday, you could give us your interpretation of that. I just think this is a very unnecessary boxing in of municipalities. I think it's a major infringement on their rights to determine their own affairs. I would much rather have seen an appeal mechanism by persons in a municipality to the NEC against categories that they felt were unfair. The municipalities cover such a vastly different geographic, demographic, areas. And they're all, you can't say that the municipalities in this country are homogenous. And I think that this is a step backwards rather than a step forward in terms of entrenching municipalities' ability to determine their own affairs and to be held accountable by those communities who elect them and pass the rates policy. So I'd like to say some comments then to Madam Chair. I'd like to say some comments until after the response received on what the problem is, because I'm still not clear on what exactly the problem is and where the evilness and the current
flexible system alone. Are there any questions? If none, then can
we have a question? Tim? I feel that one's copied.
Okay,
I think going through the public hearings that we had last week and the removal of the privately owned towns cities by the owner, I always say that we mustn't look at these sessions in isolation, because you say that if you get 19-1, it's impenetrable differentiation of the municipality. You know, the municipality may not make different rates. And when you look at different rates, may not have different rates on residential properties except as provided for in section 11.1b, 21, and 89. And when you look at this, and when you look at these sections and the ambiguities and the uncertainties of the way the municipalities are categorizing, between the different categories, you understand the challenges and the impediments that are faced by the department. The department wants to promote uniformity. We're not taking any discretion away. We're only saying let there be categories that are gay. And those categories are not necessarily compulsory, because we said at the initial stage of this hearing that we know that a blanket approach cannot be applicable to all municipalities. And are we being too prescriptive? I don't think so. I think that we're only managing. The purpose of this is to manage the regulation and to be able to promote efficiency and accountability. I think that's what we seek to do in this legislation. And if you look at the service level agreements that the municipalities have with developers, when you look at those issues, you realize that because of the inconsistencies and the actually wrongful way of the application of this section, this creates uncertainty. Because if you look at the initial intention of the privately owned towns, the meaning has basically been completely misinterpreted. So we're trying to go back to a position where we're saying these are the categories. We are not imposing, we're merely managing the process and ensuring that good governance and good service delivery is there.
I just want to understand, because you're saying promote uniformity. Well, then, I mean, if that's the goal, I mean, then we should be looking at raising a uniform rate range. We should be looking at, I mean, that's really going to protect consumers. That's the goal. I'm still not hearing what the evil is in the current situation. I'm not seeing the bogeyman. So perhaps we can get that. But I just want to give you an example. I mean, it can also potentially, and I need to be correct and wrong, have a negative effect. For instance, a city like Durham developed the Durham Point development chunk. It was a vacant piece of land, and they then brought in all the developers and put it together an attractive package where they created a different type of rating. Well, it was residential development. They created a different category which gave people a lower rate to encourage developers to come in. Is this not going to impede their ability to do that? And when we talk about where appropriate, who determines the appropriateness of it? Who is the arbiter on whether it's an appropriate category? Who would be making that decision?
Yeah, so it's on the same issue. I really find the department's argument quite bizarre, actually. Now, it's really bizarre. No, it's anyway. It's very clear with the existing Act that in Section 8, the word residential as defined in a certain way. Section 19, where it talks about residential, it's not talking about, it's not an adjective that they stuck out of thin air to mean where people live. Section 19 refers to the category residential. The category residential is not the same as the category privately owned town service by a former. So there's no conflict at all. The Act is saying you have a category called residential, and under that, you don't deviate in terms of differentiation. Right? And you have another category called privately owned town. That doesn't mean that the privately owned town gives a different deal to normal residential, that now there's a problem, because it's written that way to allow that. So you can't come along 5 years later and say, no, that's in conflict with Act of Section 19. Section 19 specifically is not talking about that. It's talking about category residential, which is 8-2A, not 8-2J. So I find that a false argument. Completely false.
Okay.
Oh, and also, gated community was not a town. So if anybody could say gated community using this clause, I mean, really, it's ridiculous. A town is what used to exist before it municipality. Those are towns. Glencoe was a town. Owned, you know, half was owned by a mine, and the land is full of them. You can't call a gated estate with 100 houses in it a town. So there's a problem between the two. I don't see a problem. I'm still trying to see problems with racing for the spot here.
Chair, on the gated communities, I think before we get to the explanation on why we want to change Section 8, on the gated communities, I think our concern is that, yes, it actually isn't a town. It's a community of residential properties mainly, who have taken a decision to live in a gated arrangement. And they have taken a decision to live outside the town, for whatever reason, or far from the edges. Because a town, you can have the inner town, but you can have the edges of the town. Municipalities actually encourage developers to do their developments right on the edge, so that they can actually provide them with bus services. They encourage them to do that. However, these communities choose to go kilometers outside the edge, by the way. Nobody forces them to locate there. So they locate themselves there, and as a result, they have to make arrangements for their services, and obviously they pay whatever, even whatever to their body corporate to sustain their lifestyle or their way of life. So our concern with that is that they approach municipalities within the guise of the property category, which, as Honourable Smith has said, it actually relates to something completely different, mining towns. And municipalities, for whatever reason, accept the arguments and then they apply them, you know, they give them extensive rebates. In certain instances, it's 50%. These are residential properties that get 50% off their rates for whatever reason. And as the Honourable Smith said, when you really think about what property rate is, I know it's a word that nobody wants to hear. When you think about what property rate is, it's a wealth tax, and wealth taxes have nothing to do with services. And there is no reason why these communities should pay 50% less than other residential communities of the same nature, same value, whatever. You can compare them just because of the fact that they're within a few walls. There's no rationale for it because there's no link between rates and those specific services. If you think of gated communities as if you consider you know, that property rate is not a payment for services, it's not at all. Payments for services are already there. There are tariffs for water, there are tariffs for electricity, tariffs for refuse, and so on. So I think that is our concern. The problem is that there is that abuse. And that abuse results in the contravention of Section 19 of residential properties being differentiated, which is completely in conflict with the Act. That's the issue around that. It's not about privately owned towns. People are taking advantage of privately owned towns.
You can send a memo to NMs to explain that they don't understand the law and stop being taken advantage of by savvy developers. You don't have to rewrite legislation. You just got internet, you're going to have to read it. Surely.
Yeah, we have done that. It's not that we haven't. We've done a statement. In fact, some of the things that we are proposing here are learned from a statement that we've undertaken on the rating aspect of how municipalities are implementing the Act. How are they applying rates and so on. So we have engaged with those specific municipalities where we have found that this is happening. We have said to them, you should not allow yourself to be coerced into this kind of arrangement. I don't know what the imperatives are on the ground, but municipalities find themselves in that situation. In fact, City of Tshwane inherited such communities when the demarcation was done, because Kungwini, which was incorporated into City of Tshwane, had arrangements with gated communities, which, by the way, were on the edge of City of Tshwane, it turned out. When City of Tshwane took over those areas, they actually nullified those arrangements. But other municipalities clearly either don't have the capacity to, or they allow themselves to be polarized in that regard. But we're not changing Section 8 to deal with gay communities. I think the gay communities thing was just raised by a stakeholder that, look, you're changing Section 8. The reason that they make a submission, they say, oh, you're changing Section 8, so now it means they can't be a category for me and I can't continue getting 50% to 70% of my rates if you're doing this. I'm going to be considered a residential property like any other residential property, which they should, in our view. They should be considered residential property. Lisa, do you want to add something?
Just honest, I mean, why are we sitting around and legislating for stupid?
Yes.
I don't understand it.
Right.
If a municipality is so stupid to forgo income in this manner, why should it be our responsibility to run around behind them and get them to do their job properly?
This is when you tell them already.
Yeah.
But Chair, I'm sorry, we're not legislating. I just said that now 2 seconds ago. I said we're not legislating for the gated community problem. That's not what we're doing. We've got other arguments that we're going to put forward to you about why we are... We've got an argument to give you about why we have... why we propose Section 8 the way it is. There mustn't be the misconception that we are revising the entire Section 8 just because of gated communities.
No,
that's not what we... That's not what we're doing.
No,
J as well. So it's not about it.
I really don't see what the argument is about. Because the onus comes back to municipality. I think it's in J. But then I think the department has made provisions for or given being by I think it's taking out that stated if I'm correct, because I don't see the initial seat in the initial act. I don't see what the problem is, because the municipalities may under Section J still have further facilities, but I'm in total agreement with what the department is saying. It's by choice that people choose to live, they want to live the way they want to live and how they want to live, and it's not specific to gated communities as they say, and then we should municipalities should have the, you know, the guideline that they're moving within as to how they access or levies, property rights levies. So I don't really see what the big practice is about. But I'm in agreement that there shouldn't be specific. Municipalities shouldn't have leeway then of being put under pressure to allow certain rebates for people who choose to live the way they want to live. Thanks.
Well, I'm thinking it's law and I don't believe it's living in the room.
I understand.
You're
another bill.
No, but what I wanted to say, this thing of mining income,
yes,
is not the one which resulted in the thing. Like we said, it arose only last week.
Yes.
And we had to apply our minders to have the confusion. So, but we couldn't close our eyes to the representation public hearing situation, because those people were saying, if we take it away, despite your argument, it will be unconstitutional. That is the point which they were saying. They said it will be illegal because we are taking the right of municipality to do that. That's what they were saying. And that is the reason as a department, together with the Office of Chief State Law Advisor, we have to look at this particular issue. So we couldn't say because this was not in our hands. Until they came and raised this issue, we were not aware that this court was being used in that particular circumstance.
But Chair, this is for me. I mean, we all agree in the gated community you should pay rates like anybody else. So we are trying to create exemptions for them.
No,
and it cost us some other men a bit time walking around.
But probably to answer your question on the issue of citizens, in the deal which was published for public comment, it deals with precisely these issues of linking citizens to rating. In the preamble, and I'm reading it as it's in the region which was published for public comment, not the one which came to Parliament, the one when we solicited public comment. To deal with some of the things, we have something where we said in the amendment to the preamble, we said that the preamble to the Local Government Municipal Property Act is hereby amended by the substitution of the fourth paragraph of the following paragraph. It says, I quote, and whereas income derived from property rent is a major source of general municipal revenue, and that revenue is not linked to a specific municipal service or the erecting of infrastructure related to that particular municipal service. But this thing is not in the final bill. But it was also to take this particular issue, because if we had the benefit, it was retained. All this argument of about gated communities, it was not going to find a window up to do, but we took that out. It was that is what it was meant to deal with, take the issue of savings out. But in hindsight, listening to all these arguments, we can say municipalities probably are being run by people who are not applying their mind, but it creates some of those confusion, because people will interface the things the way it is. Like those tower people, they came here with their lawyer. So if you were, it was about 10 people and the lawyer speaking. So in this is unconstitutional, it's unconstitutional. Those are some of the issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I wanted to respond to the reference to the Blom case, the subsidy of Chuan. That case is actually supported by the proposed 8-3, where we are saying, in addition to what we are proposing in sub 2, a municipality may determine additional categories, because the court said the state of Tshwane is competent to add a category of illegal use or non-permitted use category of property. So it's catered by the proposal, the statutory that is currently proposed. It confirms the fact that the municipality has the power to levy rates. So because Blom was complaining that the municipality cannot add a category of non-permitted use, and the court said no, the municipality can add a category.
Chair, I'm wondering if there's any merit in finishing J while we're on the subject, not related to communities, just to finish it anyway, because if it's being removed from the category, I suppose the municipality could reinstate under strict sub 3, but bear in mind that the idea was, it's not a residential rating because you're rating the entire town. I mean, there's the streets, there's the park, there's the shops, there's the infrastructure, it's cluster houses, you know, it's a town in its own right, but it was a town in its own right prior to being incorporated into the municipality. So it was actually for that reason. If it's removed in terms of this region here, what would a municipality's options be in respect of such an existing town? Would it be to reinstate the category, or to treat it as a separate component, and how would it be organized?
I can respond to that. In practice, what municipalities are doing is the valuer, you know, there's this provision called Section 9. You know, it allows for different multiple uses on a piece of land. Now, what happens in practice, although it may be a separate piece of land or amp or whatever you want to call it, what happens in practice is that the valuer goes in and looks at the piece of land and assigns the multiple use categorization. So assigns the different uses on that piece of land, residential, maybe offices, whatever you have there, industrial, hospitals, whatever is in that town. Assigns those categories which we've listed in section 8.2 anyway. Assign the use of that property. As I said in the argument, the general criteria for categorizing property is use. And even permitted use is use, actually, at the end of the day. It comes back to use. So those towns are, you know, over time. I mean, that was also, I think, a transitional time, I think, as well, when the Act came into being. Now, after the municipalities have generated two or three general valuation roles, and we've seen in practice how this can be done, these are being valued as entities. If they're owned by that mine, they are assigned, they make, the mine might be paying the rates, but they are different rates applicable within that town based on the uses of those specific properties. Can I miss anything on that, please? I hope that answers Honorable Smith's question.
Yeah. But to solve this whole issue of municipalities, being taken to town. Paul requests that the committee itself put us to what I read in the preamble of the act, because for me, if we run away from this issue, municipalities will be held hostage by all sorts of people into. Last week we were talking about gated communities. I don't know who else will be coming raising this issue, that we can reinstate everything, which is clear, and also taking into account the constitutional court we were talking about yesterday, we started delineating some of the things. It will go a great deal to assisting all municipalities that you don't have people coming in the back door talking about places, including the very same gated communities, because if it's there is a general guidance in the people as to what's cooperating. So that is what I would request the committee to apply this mind to.
Be more with the sense of welfare, property-based welfare.
Yeah. I think we'll ask the legal people to put that back in. I mean, it's appropriate.
Of course, the consensus
is not interested. I agree strongly.
Yeah.
In fact, maybe we should take Honourable Esther's advice about Section 3-4, that we should actually leave it in its entirety, because it also brings us back to the first issue. He said that either yesterday or the day before, saying why are we only removing Section 3-4 A and B? What about C and D? So if the committee deems it fit, I think that can also be done, because it's perpetuating this linked services thing, and it's bedeviling municipalities. Now, just to answer some of the questions that have been posed by the two members, one is the argument, the problem statement, but I'll also deal with, firstly, before the problem statement, the issue about state trust land, protected areas, formal and informal settlements. Our view is that every property, regardless of whether it's state trust land, or whether it's a protected area. By the way, protected areas is dealt with in Section 17, so I don't think, neither here nor there. The existence in Section 8 was superfluous in the first place, so if we can agree to that, yeah. On state-owned trust land or formal informal settlement, and municipalities, we've engaged them on this. I know it sounds like a broken record, but the basis for determining property categories is use and permitted use. You can't run away from that. It's use. Now, whether a property is on state trust land, whether it's on communal land, or whether it's in an informal settlement, it is used for a purpose. It's either used for residential, industrial, whatever you want to call it. So you can always assign a property category. The fact that these property categories have fallen off is because we have agreed amongst ourselves as national government, firstly, ourselves and national treasury and others, and with municipalities, that the basis for categorization is use. So if that's what you apply, then every single category in the country can be applied, can fall into that, including land on properties on communal land, because they're all used for a purpose. The issue of the correct that we do have property categories that have an element of ownership in there. We have to have that in order for those two specifically. Everything else is based on use. For the two which are public benefit organization properties and the category of property public service purpose, the element of ownership comes in. It has to. Especially because we've made transparency for public service purpose properties, we want to recognize those properties that are owned by the state but are used to provide those specific services. So we need to provide for the element of ownership to differentiate them from other properties which are owned by other entities. They can be owned by the private sector. They can even be owned by public benefit organizations. There are hospitals which are privately owned. There are hospitals which are owned by the state. There are hospitals that are owned by trusts or public benefit missions. So for that property category, the element of use is essential. We can't run away from it. Same thing with public benefit organization property, which I said is not a new property category. What makes for the PBO property is because it's owned by a public benefit organization, and it's different. For example, education is in their schools, a private school, so to speak. Those have to be differentiated from state schools. So you need an element of ownership in there. coming to the problem statement, look, uniformity is not the key be-all and end-all driver. We know that there are differences in municipalities. If uniformity was a key driver, I'm sure the act would have been designed in such a way where we could actually determine the rate. We can't, by the way. The act doesn't allow us to tell a municipality that the rate for residential property must be this, which is why you get the differences. If a city must have its rate for residential property, Johannesburg must also have its rate for residential property. So no, it is not, uniformity is not the primary purpose. The primary purpose here is this act is the act that regulates the power of a municipality to levy rates, firstly. And municipality, if there's an act that regulates that power, it is not an all-encompassing power where municipalities can do what they like. What is currently happening is that municipalities are able to do what they like. Sometimes it doesn't have any negative effect, granted, but sometimes it does. And sometimes when it's in the national interest for the minister to exercise his or her authority to regulate the rating of certain categories of property, because of the manner in which Section 8 is drafted, the minister is unable to do so. I'll give you an example. This is a practical example. You know that in terms of Section 19, the minister may determine ratios between the residential category of property and other categories of property. He or she may. Now, we have done that in respect of three property categories, by the way. Now, what we found when we began with that exercise was that, okay, we can determine these categories of property and determine the ratio for that. But in practice, and by the way, we had a whole list, wish list, I don't know if you've seen it, we had a ratio for every property category you could think of. We withdrew those and we limited the list to three categories of property where ratios are applicable. Those are agriculture, PSI, and public benefit organization property. But in practice, what we found is because Section 8 is as open-ended as it is, if you have a ratio, say, for public service infrastructure, or for any other property category for that matter, a municipality can run away from that ratio. They can escape it, undercut it, or whatever you want to call it. And instead of calling that property category PSI, or whatever property category it is, they just call it something else. They call it something else, they apply a different category to it, and then in the end, that ratio, or that regulation, is basically null and void. Now, the issue is, what is the point of an act which, by the way, has been put in place by the Constitution, Section 229, to regulate the power of a municipality to levy rates? What is the use of having a toothless act, or an act which is a knife without an edge at all? Because what it ends up meaning is that this is just a superfluous piece of paper, it's a shell. And when and if the need arises where you have to, either for the interest of the macroeconomy, because most of the, in general, we don't apply a ratio to each and every category of property, and that's because we're not in the business of regulating everything that moves in municipalities. We're not in the business of saying you must rate business this way, you must rate industrial this way. No, we understand that municipalities have to raise rates, and if they need to, they must apply a high rate to industrial properties. But where there is a need in terms of whether it relates to our macroeconomic interests, by the way, there are macroeconomic, this is a wealth tax and it has macroeconomic implications. We cannot run away from that. Now, when there is a decision in a country to say, we want to protect agriculture, not because agriculture is not receiving services, but because agriculture, or PSI, any other sector for that matter, we want to protect it for the sake of the broader economy. We want to protect agriculture because agriculture is so important that we need to secure our food security as a country, and if it's overrated, basically it means that those agricultural producers may go under and we might end up importing food. So what is the point that if we have a macroeconomic policy or national policy that wants to protect certain sectors, not that they'll pay nothing, they just need to be protected from overpaying and from going under. Why is it that we have the legislation that actually can't do that? Why is it that we have a legislation that when it attempts to regulate that rating, and by the way, not regulating everything, why is it that municipalities can undercut that legislation? Why is it that they can run away, create a subcategory of the very category of property that you're trying to regulate, and then rate it excessively, climb it up to 1 to 7 or whatever it is? No, municipalities that are, by the way, rating government properties at 1 to 5. I'm not going to mention them here, but it's happening. But not that we want to necessarily regulate government property, but the point is, if experience points to the need to protect certain property categories from excessive rating, not to zero rate them, if that need arises, then there's no point in having a piece of legislation that does not allow that to happen. We need to actually sit back and ask ourselves, otherwise we shouldn't have the property rates act, we shouldn't, municipalities should just be rating according to what they would like to happen. That is one of the key imperatives that led us to do this. The second one is, we can't say that we're implementing an act when we don't know what exactly is happening. It is very difficult for certain municipalities to look at the rate policy and the rates that a municipality actually applies and make sense of them. There are so many residential properties, and then you can have up to 10 types of residential properties, and you're wondering, why so many residential properties? Why are there so many types of business properties? And why do they have so many applicable different rates applied to them? And it's not even made clear in the rate policy why this differentiation is actually there. That means we are not able to, because of the fuzziness that's created, the opaqueness, we're not able to actually even monitor and see what's happening. We don't know. Most of the time we're in the dark and we don't know. And surely the act should be monitored. We should be able to monitor what is happening. If we have taken the time to create a piece of legislation, we should be able to monitor it and see that it applies according to Section 229 of the Constitution. It is not an open-ended act that can just implement any way you want to and apply a rate whichever way you want to. Yes, rate policies make municipalities accountable. I agree with that. However, a rate policy is the creation of the Property Rates Act, and it needs to comply with the Property Rates Act. It cannot be the be-all and end-all and be above the Property Rates Act. By the way, municipalities do try to use the rate policy to escape regulation when needed. Certain municipalities told us, you cannot determine that ratio because we actually have created a different category of property, and we are allowed to create a different category of property because we have a rate policy. Now you ask yourself, yes, you have a rate policy, but that rate policy has to be consistent with the Act and with any regulation of the Act. So it's not about uniformity. We do understand that you cannot have a complete uniformity across the board. That is why we provided for subsection B, which allows for that discretion. But it's really, really more about opaqueness. We're not able to monitor, and Parliament is not able to provide oversight. We're constantly having ratepayers complaining that they don't know or they don't understand their rates. They don't understand why they are being rated differently as a category of property to that same property category, and so on. And the second thing that we need to be able to recognize and do is to exercise this piece of legislation as intended, such that regulation, when needed, can actually be applied. You can't have a toothless piece of legislation. And Section 8, as it is, renders this act just a piece of paper and renders it toothless. Thank you, Jay.
Come up something before the Honourable start responding, so that they ask questions or they say all of their things that make sense after listening to everything. It's like Veronica was saying, the reality is this. Before I come to that, let me deal with this issue of a local tax. It was in municipal property. These are the provincial taxes. These are the municipal taxes. The reason you have those differentiations between the city of Joburg versus the city of this town of Joburg, it will happen because it is a local tax, it's not a national tax. if the idea was that in terms of a certain amount in the hand, it was to be the same throughout the country, this thing should not have been devolved to local government. It should have become a national tax the same way in terms of VAT. It doesn't matter whether you are in Limpopo, you are in a part of Mpumalanga, it's one thing. Now, secondly, outside something of a national uniform application in terms of its tax burden, like national taxes, we have provincial taxes. But within a geographical space or a provincial tax, then you can have a particular tax which applies within the entire jurisdiction of that province. So if it's case at hand, for example, whether something is resident in Itequini or Kakamba, it will be the same within that particular province. The third element is this thing, which is the Municipal Property Rights Act, and any tax-related aspects which will come in through the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act, because it's not only this, it's only that in terms of the implementation of the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act, there is nothing up to now to the Minister of Finance and Treasury have authorized for municipalities to come into. But if it just authorized through the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act, you will speak with the community. So when we talk about uniformity, we understand the constitutional constraint that we cannot in a serious manner make that which is supposed to be locally determined become national. Otherwise we'll be acting contrary to the spirit and letter of the constitution. And we don't want to do that. However, when we talk about uniformity, all that we are saying, from monetary perspective, and you know what is it is, this thing should, we should be able to know what it is. Now when it comes to if we don't have such a need, that are the provisions of this act, which we should recognize that in terms of implementation, it cannot work. It's not only Section 19. The other one which I will pick on is Section 20. I'll read it from the act so that Section 20 of the act itself. That relates to limits on annual increases of rates. It states that Section 1, the minister may, with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance and by notice in the Gazette, set an upper limit on the percentage which, by which a rate on property category or a rate on a specific category of property may be increased, or B, the total revenue derived from it on all property categories or a rate on a specific category of property may be increased. Number two goes to come to say that you can have different limits based on different kinds of municipalities, that is to allow for differentiation. Like what we are doing in terms of valuation rolls, in terms of metro B, that is the rest. B, it also says different categories of properties. Again, subject to Section 19. Now, you have two provisions of the Act, which if Section 8 is allowed as it is currently, we have to be upfront to accept that these two provisions of the law will never in any way be implemented, precisely because you allow municipalities to come for something which is a residential. If we come with the Minister of Finance for whatever reason we say we want to activate Section 20, we cannot activate this man and voice because Jobek defines the things different to what it has been done. The same with Section 19. So I have saying that the two sections which we may need to put out is Section 19 and 20 because they become redundant in their own right. And that is part of the reason none of those have been activated. We tried Section 19, we may be limited by this because its own challenges. And I think that at the upfront, the reason is not that when this thing has been done, we will have to go in as mentioned. And again, from whatever we do with the thing, it's a concurrence between our minister and the Minister of Finance precisely for what they will affect. Because we are looking at it in terms of also, in terms of the impact on the macro economy. When you start regulating the thing, it will have to be because there is nothing. It becomes something like a worst case of scenario, but if something happens, now national government rule is what we are bound. There is nothing we can do. You can call us to parliament, ask us if a business happens, but we can't do it because Section 8 as it is at the moment, it doesn't give us that compass that whatever objectives are to be achieved, it will be achieved. So precisely, that is where the problem statement comes from. It's a problem statement from monitoring to know what is happening in uniformity, but there are additional problem statements. The act as it currently is Section 9 and Section 20, it becomes difficult to implement the rules. So those particular provisions, they are like I have said, retarded. Okay, you want to say something?
I thank the department very much for what they just said, because that's precisely what I was looking for. In other words, as far as I'm concerned, I didn't have the motivation for this to make sense. And I really have something I can put my teeth into now to see whether I agree with it or not. So that understands there are three things, right? First of all, potentially the ratio could be undercut by the fact that the ministry could willfully choose to recategorize itself to evade the consequences of the categorization of the ratio. That same thing, because it's a repeat really, that renders the powers of minister generally to intervene weaker, much weaker. So that's 19 and 20. And then secondly, if you're unable to monitor properly, it means that municipalities do what they do. Okay, so fine. I think it makes sense. I understand where you're coming from. I'm not 100% sure I agree. Well, maybe I agree if I understand this. First of all, what is the nature of the actual problem in reality in respect of municipalities recategorizing their things in order to avoid erasure being imposed on them? You mentioned, I mean, one example of the case. In fact, I don't see why you don't tell us which towns they are, because it's good for us to know. Why? What transparency means you say it. You tell us what it is. I think we should ask them to tell us what it is. And, Chair, can we not ask the department to be over there and tell us which municipalities are playing these games? I mean, I would like to know. Because if the problem is one municipality being willful, that's not a problem with one municipality. If it's a widespread problem, then obviously you've got problems, and I can understand where you're coming from. Then I want to know also, when you say you can't monitor what's going on, I assume that you would have done some sort of study or something in the office somewhere, a Chantage report which says, this is how municipalities are categorizing it through our country, this is why it's impossible to understand what's happening. If you've got such a thing, it would be nice to see it. But I'm just taking your word for it, that it's so confusing that you don't know what's going on, you can't monitor. I mean, I've got to take your word for that. I mean, is it really that bad? But at least I can understand it could be a problem, but is it really a problem? I don't know. And then third issue, I would like to know that if this Section 8 goes through as is, what are the consequences for municipalities now in respect of their finances going forward and their cash flows and empirically what's going to happen once, I know this is, you know, you pay things in and so on, but still, what are the consequences going to be on the end user and on their finances? So if for example, municipality A has got three or four categories of residential, right? A, B, C, D, and there's a differentiated rate. So what they think is a good reason, a good sound reason. Now you have one tax rate. I'd like to know what the consequences are on the ones for whom the municipality in its wisdom decided it should pay less than somebody else. Their rates will rocket up. Now, I'd like to know what that means for that bunch of consumers for whom that category is being created. It may be created with very good reasons. They think very sound reasons. I'd like to know, you know, I'm going to take your word for it that it's all hunky-dory once they're all labeled equally, but maybe it's not. Maybe people are going to suffer the consequences of a flat rate, where the city has deliberately tried to differentiate internally within a category. So I'd like to know what consequences would be there too. Thanks.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I thank you much to the link. I'd like, honourable, so if I've got a clear understanding about where you're coming from with the problem. Mm-hmm. I still don't understand, though. I mean, if I was an agriculture, to say I was on a farm, and the minister promulgates the regulation that said, you know, the ratio, and that's it, and the minister tries to do something different, I mean, surely there's mechanisms for appeal, I mean, in the race appeal, appeal as a project, has the government actually been subjected to any of this, where their property be raised into some other category? Has it not been challenged? I mean, it seems to me, if I owned a house as a subsidiary rebate, I can say I'd be the last person on earth sitting back, you know, waiting for government to legislate. I would have been, you know, taking action against it. Now, just haven't heard any of these cases ever going to a court or, you know, to some sort of appeal. I mean, I'd also like to get done things, like Ron Smith has said, in terms of extent. So back to Section 3, and I know perhaps I wasn't listening, but I didn't get the answer to my question. Who determines where appropriate? Who determines what is appropriate and what's not appropriate? Okay. And so who decides that it's not appropriate?
So the proviso means the minister, I presume.
Who would decide it's not appropriate? The minister. The application, that's the minister saying, we would like to do the following, we would like to institute the following additional categories.
I think we made it clear that the proviso that it provided that the exceptional, we have said that provided that such property category does not circumvent the categories of the rental property that must be determined in subsection 2. So as long as it's not in conflict with the sections that are in, that are mentioned, the categories that are mentioned, the municipality, we are not, I think in the beginning of my presentation I said that we are not in a business of taking the discretion of the municipalities away. There are constitutional imperatives and rights and duties that are embedded in the constitution we're still upholding. And we also need section 4. Section 4, we understand the challenges that the municipalities will have in implementing this section. And as a way of facing in, we think that this section will only be effective on a date determined by a minister. So this is the second that it's not, when this act is enacted, it's not automatically going to be operational. We do take into account all the processes that needs to be complied with.
Allow to allow for the legal section to have an A list on what is agreed upon on the changes.
Just that, Madam Chair, my understanding is that the deliberation would be next week. There's stuff that, you know, there's been interaction we've heard is I'd like to go away and look through some of the stuff and test it against, you know, other documents, and there's been cases that have been mentioned that I've made notes of that I'd like to go back, and I'm uncomfortable, I think I agreed to something when I could come back here next week and then have a very different view on it. Yeah.
So I tried to test that so that all of us will go through. Like now, I'm using this. I'm supposed to be comparing this myself and use my own notebook, like I usually know, so that I'll read in my own notebook. But we are taking time, of which having been gone through this exercise, it means that next week we must sit also on Wednesday. We must sit on Tuesday and Wednesday. Then we are not going to adopt the bill on Tuesday. We'll do this exercise, having gone through it ourselves, you sit aside, you go through yourself, so that you'll be able quite to agree upon. I took it maybe with others, we'll remember and understand which contribution during the deliberation or any changes that we needed to change. But if member feels that they are not ready to do this exercise, it means that on Tuesday we sit, do this exercise, and so that the legal section will get an A list on what is agreed upon. Then on Tuesday, that's when we, if they sit the after our sitting, they'll sit the whole night passing the bill. Because we're not going to adopt the bill, having received it, or with all the changes. And after our deliberations, they'll sit and draft the bill with the changes.
Now, if I can just get some clarity, then are we reading this together with the document? Because the department made a number of concessions that are not captured what's here. I mean, there's some even significant dangers. So are we reading this together? Are we?
So I was proposing that with those changes, the research section are supposed to do it for us, so that you agree on how to see. So I thought maybe in our mind, having been having a paper that is prepared for us, we'll be able to remember which changes that we have done.
I was thinking also, Professor, just the way you've now explained,
together with the department,
you know, they've obviously made notes as well, in terms of the changes that need to be made. But maybe we do it together with the document and the department input and the members input and then the board. Because I really think there comes an objection that we don't go through this if it's going to give us a problem next week. Because we won't have enough time to go through this.
I'll give you a solution out of it. I'm happy to go through this process now, but I, you know, there's things I don't know that I'm for or against them. You know, I want to be able to go back and test them. So, provide that, you know, I'm not going to get jumped on next week when I come back and say I'm happy about this clause because X, Y, and Z. It makes it easier. So I'll reserve my rights then on the sections which I don't flag up front as problematic. So, and obviously then I'm happy perhaps to make a written submission to you as well before the meeting next week, so that you have it beforehand.
But at the meaning that we must continue this exercise, but in some clauses that you are not comfortable with, we still going to go back and look for it. So I was on section. On agricultural property. I said, are we agreeing on the change? May I haven't consulted every member. I'm comfortable with the exercise that we are going to be doing now.
I am clear with that.
I am not comfortable, but I am concerned if we postpone it and do it the committee alone, it's better when we have the department with us in the moment and then do it but I'm concerned with what John is saying. If we agree on this and next week it comes up with something different, then it's meaningless for us to do it now. That's my concern. Good one?
Chairperson, maybe I need a clarity that if like what John is saying, whereby she sees or consults and come up with something different, will the department be here on okay, if that is the case, I don't have a problem.
But we must remember that this is our mouth situation. It's ours now. We are doing whatever we needed to do. Yeah. Okay.
I can understand when is the department wanting to get to Parliament? Is there a sort of time frame like on a railway track? Because what date is this supposed to come to Parliament?
We were anticipating to submit it for table to 83 next week, but I'm checking in reality it won't be next week. Next week we're going to fix Tuesday and Wednesday. So if we adopt it on Wednesday, it should be submitted on Thursday. It's 3 days before tabling, 3 working days before tabling. Meaning that it will be the President's State of Addition address the following week, debate on the responses, the response, and the other week. We've only got 13 days. Only 13, of which we are sitting the week three times. We are left with 4 weeks of sitting. So it means not only us who are in this queue, this is for 27 days. Because in this sense, it's still not doing. So that's why they say we be flexible that our previous members are treated also on Wednesday. But we cramped ourselves because of time taking that maybe to see it like this. But when taking the drafting and catering our discussions and the changes, it is another day. We won't allow it to go beyond next week. I'm telling you, if it goes beyond next week, it means that the bill won't be able to be passed. And there is a due date time, a stipulated time for the bill to be around Parliament. If that time is due, because remember, we received the bill in September. If that time is due, it means that it's, what's the name? It lapses and it goes back. It is 6 seconds for answer, okay. Because it's the same time though, the NCLP will need 6 weeks because it doesn't have to go to provinces. But to caution against the bill lapsing before Parliament rises, it has to go to NCLP soon.
Just on that, have we settled the legalities around that? Because I know there was some unhappiness from News and Soldiers side that it was going 75 route, not the other route.
Well, I know the JTN tag is section 75. I haven't heard of any tagging being changed.
And maybe to ask on that one, it's an amendment to an already existing legislation.
But if I can just say, just because the principal act was 75 doesn't necessarily mean an amendment vote of 75. We take our guidance from section 76(3) of the Constitution. And if a bill doesn't contain any of the provisions that are set out today, then it's a 75 bill. And I think that was the opinion of the JTM when they tagged us as a 75.
Making some amendments to provincial monitoring and reporting. And section 81 is being amended. And so I think that was the one that there was some uncertainty about whether in fact the route is the correct route. When we first discussed this, you're infringing on the rights and duty of provinces as well.
But I think it has been sometimes on constitutionally on the table.
If I may just answer on the tagging, a Bill 76 4, if it falls within the Schedule 4 competencies, and property rights doesn't fall within Schedule 4, nor is it an exclusive concurrent competency of the provinces. And then when you look at the word, does it affect provinces, you've got to look to see whether it falls within 76-3, A to F, which is those types of legislation dealing with either public service commission, public administration, the public protector. Those would then be pieces of legislation that would then make this a 76. And I think the view was that it doesn't contain any provision that falls within a Schedule 4 competency, and nor does it contain any provision which falls within the ambit of Section 76(3) A to F.
I'm not a lawyer, but can I add to that one thing? Probably the police will promote me to be a candidate when the experience is approved by no, but also the provincial monitoring. In the Act itself, there is a section on provincial monitoring. So what is happening is we are amending it to flesh out in detail some of the things we could ask these provinces. So it's not like if for the first time we are proposing a new thing, it has been there all along.
Can we then continue? So in the bill... So the next proposal is...
I think on section 1 on definition of agriculture on page 3, the only issue there was for the committee to decide whether the rearing and trading and hunting of game is included or is taken out. Because if that is clarified, then the legal justice will be clear. That whole issue about food production, because if the argument of food production, which is the one which was behind the act being where it was, it means what will be deleted there. It will be after, it will say means property that is used primarily for agricultural purposes. What will be taken out? It will be including the rearing, trading and hunting of game, but so that component will be taken out.
Okay.
because I needed, remember I said from
what about the property to
section I needed to remember them.
Because
anything that is in the bill that is underlined is taken. The one the one in bracket taken off, the one underlined is goes in. So you want me to read all these things?
So we take out including the heavy trading and hunting.
Okay, it's fine.
But it can be made out when I get hands with coming. What the definition of day there, we didn't make anything there.
Yeah.
Then And then we are down. Phone number B, that is the definition of day. We didn't make anything. And when we looked at public submission, there was nothing controversial there. So it's up to the committee where you are. Satisfied or not?
There has been on the issue of day, there was a submission from the Western Cape government. It is read as follows that a new self-standing clause governing the handling of day should be inserted as the current definition of day is not in the form of a definition and should be deleted.
We looked at that, but that is not co-parliamental, and it was only one kind of a comment which came forward. When we looked at it, we didn't see anything parliamental which necessitates us to change the definition on that one.
Can I propose that we
delete
it?
Yeah, okay.
Now, number is.
There was no comment then. It was a simple thing. So the committee asked.
Okay.
Now, on number D, the definition of land tenure rights, there was nothing which we amended. So that can be retained.
Okay.
On number E, mining property, what we're talking about in Marigadi is only linked to section 46, so it doesn't apply here the concerns which they had to stakeholders when it comes to section 46, where we indicate that all the definitions they didn't have a problem. For number F, municipal purposes, there was nothing here by way of concerns which were raised. So we are suggesting that the same be retained, but we are proposing here as an amendment. For number G, I can't recall what the name, but I can't recall anybody commenting on it, whatever we are amending. So I'll submit that to that amendment, it should be supported. On office bear, that there is no amendment, but Veronica also come in if there is something there. There is nothing. The only thing which comes is on official residence, where there was a suggestion which was made and which we agreed to, and it will read as follows: official residence in relation to place of public worship means a single residential format. What will be deleted is the thing which is registered in the office of register of deeds. And again, it comes again when you continue, which is in the name of a religious community or registered in the office. So that reference to registration with the office of register of deeds, that is what needs to be deleted out by the remaining.
So,
can I just
remove register?
Oh, okay. The reason we are saying this, if you take the country, in your metropolitan or urban area, where you've got zoning and all those things, it's not a problem. Because if you go to the office of register, whatever property you talk about, something will be registered. But when you go to the rest of the country in rural areas,
then you have a problem because most of those properties strictly are not there. So you have that flexibility.
Okay.
You have run your strategy saying this is a place of carbon worship and this is the radical related to that. So the issue of going to check with the register of this is not that. But it does not prevent metropolitan municipalities or other metropolitan municipalities where they got the decision to go and check.
So
they just put in the opposite when the state comes out. Yeah. Then, linked to that, I'm just reminded, there was a very good thing which the Honorable Chief raised. The official residence, that issue of one property. So it's a legal drafting which needs to come in. That good argument is one or not. Where we said it's one, but when he read it, an official visa is this. So, but the principle is that it's one official residence. So the legal drafting, your can redraft the thing if the committee takes that principle. One resident. Yeah.
No, I need clarity. What did you say from the beginning? The ones written in bold letters are the ones that are to be erased. Yes. The insertion, all insertion. And those that are underlined remain. The one in black are out. In black bracket. And then if they are not black like this one, underline, like the one that you are talking, are we not talking about AJ? Is it A?
Because
it's not bracketed.
She'll see the brackets on Tuesday and Wednesday when the drafters have redrafted it.
But it's good thing.
Can I just also the of the one official resident only women income in will be incorporated in the
Okay, on page 4, which relates to the definition of owner, we have not changed anything there. And in BC, which is in relation to buildings, other immovable structure or infrastructure refers to in section 7.1, means a holder of a mining right. That is, those particular issues which had consensus, this is what we did yesterday, this is not a problem. The only problem they have about mining is section 46.
Mm.
So we will suggest that this be approved. Now on I, place of public watch, there is no issue there, and we are not proposing any other additional amendments. And on number K, public service infrastructure, in terms of the definition of the things, there was nothing there, because there were explaining to these things around runways. That amendment definition, there was no concern which one raised here.
Just for clarity, later one.
Oh, sorry, yeah, right, it's G. So, but now it won't change, it's having one K.
Okay, just for clarity, there was a comment raised on that definition of airport infrastructure. However, we felt that it was, we didn't take it into account, it wasn't appropriate because this person is, the person that made the comment is saying that the areas that they are calling public service infrastructure can be developed, which is not true, by the way. Those areas cannot be developed for reasons of air safety control and all those things. So his comment was irrelevant. What I'm saying now is that there was a comment in this regard, but the comment was not relevant, so we did not take it into account. So we retained it as it is.
Okay.
On public service tables, in terms of the definition, there was no issue there which was raised. The only issue which was related to the issues, the concerns around ratios and Section 9 itself, which was also discussed today, but not on the definition of that. Yeah. Then, now I'm going to M.
Just from a drafting perspective for the definition of public services purposes, and I'm just throwing it out there, it says in relation to the use of a property means property owned and used by an organ of state for the rendering of the following services. Now, when you just refer to hospitals and public clinics, that's not a service. They will provide a health service. So I'm wondering if those preceding words shouldn't be redrafted to reflect that this is the type of property you're looking at. But to say hospital is sort of a noun. The service would be hospital services. We have to think about how we're going to change the preceding words up front. It could be in relation to the use of the property such as or something like that. I don't know, we'll have to think about something there.
Okay. Well, on M, which is the ratio, the city of Johannesburg, which we agreed with, sponsored an amendment and I'll read it. It states that a ratio in relation to Section 9 means the relationship between the present amount in rent applicable to residential properties and, now come to the edition, and categories of different, so that is what they are suggesting that we add, which we agree with.
Different
of non-residential properties, yeah. So that is the only addition there which was sponsored, and we agree, we see what they were trying to make sure that it doesn't have any confusion.
So are we agreeing on the
addition?
It doesn't change
anything. But it doesn't change anything.
Can
we clarify? On residential property, was there anything on the definition except that we suggested to the committee yesterday here? That we needed to have something in our residential property means the property included in the evaluation or in terms of taking that, in respect of which the primary use of the initiative is for residential purposes and add without derogation from 59.
Okay.
Then we add after residential purposes without derogation from 59 in order for the multiple people to come in.
The whole thing now it was read as a residential property, the property included in the evaluation or in terms of Section 48 subsection 2 subsection D, in respect of which the primary use of permitted use is for residential purposes without derogating from Section 9.
Now, on page
5, on Section 2, that amendment to the principal act, there was no issue there, which was raised. On clause 3, again, here is where the Honorable Ian Hazen comes in. The discussion which we had in this morning. Number 3. So if, because what we're proposing here was by the TV in subsection 4 of paragraph A and B. But in today, you are saying that why can't we add C and D? So that is a decision which needs to be made. Whether we put, which we put subsection C and D or not.
Then we'll believe in the rule of 3-4 because it is for C, D, C, and D. So if this proposal is taken by the committee, we'll mean that this will be taken to say by the beginning of subsection 4.
Can we just
We delete special three. Signals 3-4.
Yeah. It's 3-4. Your proposal is to remove A and B.
And retain C and D.
And retain C and D. But I mean, is C and D still relevant then if you remove A and B? No, I think you regard it as still relevant. Or you?
Look, the only reason we left it was that the study that determined the ratios was only took into account A and B. But having had the discussion that we had today as well, which made it clear that property rates are well taxed and not linked to services, it points to it being wise to delete C and D. If the committee agrees.
Because it would be replaced by the rebate system of the common 2-5, the ratio system. But maybe we should put something in here then about the ratio under that.
There's no need to put it in because the ratio is applicable. Everybody must apply the ratio.
Okay, but what about putting everybody looking for in there but taking out A, B, C, and D must take into account the ratio as per regulations and section what section the ratio is. So you're taking out A, B, C, and D and replacing it with what you suggested in terms of the ratio. So it must take into account, Ivan, and then the ratio.
Veronica was saying that it's a theory, section
19.
Yeah, section 19. Where the concept of a ratio is introduced, it says that a municipality may not levy a rate B. A municipality may not levy a rate on category of non-residential properties that exceeds the prescribed ratio to the rate on residential properties determined in terms of subsection 11, subsection 1 to that, provided that different ratios may be set. Now, it goes on to say that number two, the ratio referred to subsection 1, subsection D may only be prescribed with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, and this has already been done. So there is no need to make reference to it because those ratios regulations are already in, and hence we're talking about those discounts for Africa. So I don't think there is a need for us when we delete it to make reference to it.
Okay, let's just look at the last scenario. The minister withdraws the ratios in a year's time or 2 years' time.
Okay.
Then those properties of agriculture then become vulnerable again with no fallback in terms of the act. So, you know, that's why I said, if you refer specifically, because that's the intention, is to protect agricultural land from being overly rated, to protect food security and, you know, just in an effective identifier. So they're not safe to leave in, you know, a specific clause that they then have a fallback on if, for instance, the ratio is a threat to you down the line.
Okay,
fine.
Yeah,
what else
is happening here? But in terms of
what it does, it doesn't change anything because those ratios are already out, are being implemented.
But can we please go back and confirm and then look the same thing that you want to ask?
Oh, okay. Here, G, it says the following. Four things that when considering the criteria to be applied,
in respect of any exemption, rebates, and reduction from property used for agricultural purposes, a municipality must take into account C, the extent to which agriculture assists in meeting the service delivery and... A, the extent of services provided by the municipality in respect of such properties. B, the contribution of agriculture to the local economy.
That's the one that's...
Yeah, those two are the ones that we were proposing to be taken out. Now, number two, which is the subject matter of the current deliberation, is that the extent in agriculture assists in meeting the service delivery and development obligations of the municipality. And this is the contribution of agriculture to the social and economic welfare of farm workers.
Maybe, Harriet, if you can tell us what, you know, the discussion that we're having with the Honorable Denise and whether there's a need to refer to the ratio in place of, you know, in place of the deletion.
So here's the basis of one thing. Obviously, the original drafters of the Act wanted to include a safeguard for agricultural property. My concern is that by removing this in its entirety, the safeguard is gone. Yes, we've got ratios, but Minister Tsunodi may not be the minister in a few months' time. The new minister could come in and say, I don't want ratios, scrap them. There's no fallback and protection position there, which was the original intention of this clause, to protect agriculture from vexatious municipalities.
But the ratio is regulated, it's in the bill. How then the new minister can come in and scrap it?
It's the minister's discretion, my understanding. The ratios are set at the minister's discretion, and he can decide whether they're or not. He could actually choose to exercise the right to the clause or not to exercise the right to the clause.
But the clause itself being amended.
We can set the ratio. He set the ratio. The ratio didn't come to our committee.
Okay.
We didn't ask them, and we had no discussion about this. But that's
no,
about the
minister. No, but the
honorable member is going to
the Act requires the Minister of Culture and the Minister of Finance, the two of them in concurrence. So if the Minister of Culture said, I'm taking this thing out, on his own, or her own, she cannot take it until the Minister of Finance is in full agreement. It requires those two. So if they want to take it out, the two of them, they would have to agree. Neither can the Minister of Finance say, in his own, or her own, to say, I'm taking this thing out, the two of them would have to agree. So I just wanted to bring that element, because that is the reason the issue of concurrence was also picked, so that the two of them, they should have applied to their mind very well as to what the reasons are, because this is a critical matter.
Can I add something? The other thing is, it is a regulation and it requires wide-ranging consultation. You can't just take it out and carry on, so every person who is affected needs to have a say in that, and their input must be considered.
I'm understanding that in terms of 19.1b, these ratios must be prescribed by regulation, because prescribed is regulation. I'm trying to see whether that is an area of category that must be prescribed, and I'm looking here to see that it's something that may be prescribed. But I'm understanding that there's regulation out there. So would the safeguard, if it says something along the lines of when considering the criteria to be applied, a municipality must take into account any regulation, the regulation prescribed in terms of 19.1b. Would that be a safeguard? Something along those lines, so that they know that these regulations must be taken into account. Would that work?
Yeah.
I think I'd be more comfortable that there is a fallback position in the Act. I don't know what's going to happen in 2-3 years down the line. At least there's a recourse in the bill where specifically mentions it. They also, there can be pressure to have those ratios.
Why can't we just then leave it as it is? When you propose that the MP to leave, you say again.
No, I think the discussion is when you're having it because there's a strong case to delete A, B, C, and D. However, sort of fallback position is being requested that should be slotted in, as the parliamentary colleague said. I think that is to protect agricultural property owners if, in case, someone wants to come in and remove the regulation. Now, I think what we need to debate is whether the committee agrees that we add that, you know, when municipalities determine their rates, policies, and they determine their rates, they must consider, they must take into account the ratio. So the committee has to see whether it agrees with the slotting that in case of what we are, what is proposed to be deleted.
If we go back to the original problem which Veronica and others highlighted, she said that what happened is A and B is a loophole for agriculture to come and say, well, we don't want to pay rates. And my point was, what, you know, you're taking out half the loophole, but here you still provide wiggle room for you to, you know, to cause profit, because then the municipality, instead of A using A and B to justify it, will use C and D to justify it. I mean, I've got logistical discipline, but municipality is very creative, as you know. And so, you know, the fact was to close the loophole, but then also to commensurately protect agriculture from vexatious municipalities or vexatious action down the line with a fallback position so they can't be abused going forward.
Then now we're saying if it's really AGM3, then
that they must then take into account the regulations that are prescribed in terms of section 19.1b. No, the first part of 4 will stay. Only the A, B, C, and D will be taken out. But added to the first part of 4 will be they must take into account the regulations we'll cross up.
That will assist with the political management. I don't think that the president will have a problem. Although even if it does not have the regulations are out, but it is the issue of the political management of the province. And I think it's fine. Okay, then for... Now I move to floor 4. Again.
We are agreeing that on floor 4. We see it as... When considering the criteria to be applied in respect of any exemption, rebate and reductions of properties used in agricultural purposes, a municipality must take into account, we delete the A, B, C, and D. Why not take into account that delete take it? They must take into account that they must take into account the legislation, regulations in terms of section 19B.
Okay, yeah. Now that you have read it in full, I think it creates problems again. Because it's better to have to delete 3 and 4, because if we go that route, the issue which we had that they have already given advertisers 70%, it will signal to municipality that there is an obligation to give this rebate, whereas that obligation is therefore any property category in terms of the rating policies, whether they need rebates or exemptions. But if we do it that way, then it will be, you have this other thing, then again, you are obligated to consider this thing.
Can I suggest a writing that doesn't keep this open door?
Yeah.
Because we're trying to close that revolving door where municipalities feel forced by agricultural property owners. We should delete the whole of 4 as it is. So what it needs to say is something along the lines of, and I'm just paraphrasing, a municipality in applying rates to agricultural properties must apply them, taking into account the regulations issued in terms of section 19.1, yeah. That's what I'm suggesting. I think that will be cleaner. It won't have a scope where it's as if there are additional rebates that should be applicable. When a municipality determines the four as a whole should read, when a municipality determines a rate applicable to agricultural property, it must take into account the regulations promulgated in terms of section 19. We'll leave it drafted, I think.
No,
somehow.
Yeah.
So I think we'll read it out once it's drafted. The drafting. Yeah.
Now on source 4, on source 4, what there we said yesterday, which I will again read, is to further make an amendment taking into account, I'm not so much whether it was Salta or whoever who sponsored it. We have something, so it will read, a municipality must adopt bylaws and publish. So we add and publish. In terms of section 12, so we are adding back there, and taking the rest to the main.
Is it not clear to say? Is it not clear to say that municipality must adopt and pass the bylaws in terms of section 12 and 13? No, that's not what I heard. Just.
Okay. On clause 7, nothing here. It was that issue of the district management areas. That is where it came from, which are no longer there in the country. Can you come again? Okay, now I'm on page 6. Now we are on clause 7. On principle, there was one minor thing by which Veronica, I don't know if you recall, but which when we looked at it, it didn't make sense, where somebody was suggesting that apparently it needed to be replaced by something, but we looked at it and we realized it was more about taking the drafting that we need to retain what we have here.
So that was all.
Okay.
On point of procedure, can you agree that we capture the essence of what the amendment is all about, the drafting and all other aspects we'll deal with later? So that we don't say, as long as we understand what the committee agrees upon, we capture that and then we go and draft it. So because if we're going to suggest amendment or proposal on each and every clause, it's going to be tedious.
Just on clause 7, I mean, those references there might have to change depending on how efficient they change. And then I just want to say that, I mean, there would also be, we'll also be collecting the drop in, like that N should be a small N, you know, that kind of stuff.
Now on clause 11.
Yes.
Eight. Okay, on clause 8, I don't recall anything here. Okay. What we have there says that section 11 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 2 of the following subsection. The rate levied by municipality on residential property with a market value below a price prescribed valuation level may, instead of a rate determined in terms of subsection 1, be a uniform fixed amount per property. So but we didn't receive any issues to that. Now, clause 9. Now I'm coming back on track. What is Mary? Okay, we didn't get anything here. Anyway, it was a cross-reference to the municipal finance management. Now, on clause 10, there is an amendment here which we we requested the committee, which I will repeat. It was read as follows. Section 14 of the first part XQC by amended by the substitution for subsection 2 of the following subsection. To a resolution on living rights in a municipality must be annually promulgated within, we're saying 30 by 60 days of the day of resolution. So it's two things that we are amending. Within 60 days of the date of the resolution, then the rest remains the same. So that is based on the other day's deliberation.
On point 11, there were no comments here which came suggesting any amendment. So we can speak that and it goes up to the APCC and that other team. Now I want to talk crap on page 17. There was no comment there which was raised. The only thing here is what we discussed yesterday, because this relates to certain things which the committee agreed, and I will please reflect on what the committee yesterday agreed that we need to do. In the principal text, then the last draft will be with that. We said, it says, the current act says that a municipality affected by the notice of the Act 2 in paragraph A must give effect to the notice and, if necessary, adjust its budget for the next financial year. So what was agreed yesterday is that we will amend that particular section, so it will read that a municipality affected by a notice of the Act 2 in paragraph A must give effect to the notice in order to take out the decision to deal with the issues with municipality for a reason. And based on that, what we are amending in terms of Greek here, which dealt with by when this request would have received to the minister is called off. So we withdraw that part. So what will happen is we'll make a new amendment to deal with what I was saying, and we will draw this amendment which was taken by when this request was received by the minister. Can I move to the next? Okay. On A, there is nothing there. On B, there is nothing. On C, there is nothing. On D, there is nothing. Again, this touches on the mining property number. Is mining? Yeah, on the mining property. This is what we said yesterday, that when we liaised with the people who are raising concerns, they said what we are doing here is fine. The only thing is with respect to section 46, so that is where we make an amendment. So it means that the thing, if the committee agrees, then it can be retained as it is. Then on E, so there was nothing. The D. Okay, state here, section 17 of the principal act is hereby amended, D, by the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph F of the following paragraph. A, on mining rights or mining payments within the meaning of the Mineral and Petroleum Resource Development Act 2002, blah, 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 excluding any building, other immovable structures and infrastructure above the surface of the mining property required for the purposes of mining. And that was to clarify, as we said, that the things are in agricultural areas, so you find that it's cheaper than mining. So, there was nothing. G, on supplementary valuations, we are not making any amendments. Like Veronica, and it doesn't look like. No. On G,
There's nothing. There were no comment on D and H.
The honorable member that raised biofuels, but he was just asking whether it is mining. We indicated that, you know, we really can't say, we don't know, we can't actually take it into account yet. He was just raising it as a point of clarity.
Now it means I will go to clause 14, eh? Clause 14. Are
you finished with H?
H, which
is a major supplementary issue. But clause is just to say one thing, the reason we said that.
What is what you are talking about are the things which were discussed when we said that the things will be opening, you will never have a tight closing gate for an objection to the valuation role. So that's one of the deliberations we had. It was in relation to those things. So that is the reason we didn't put any amendment.
I'm so strange even now.
Yeah. On 14, this we need to be, we may need to come back to it after dealing with taking, with an amendment to Section 8. But other than that, there were no issues which were raised. So I'm guessing that there may be consequential reasons for us to come back after dealing with Section 8. Now, on clause 15, there were no issues which were raised there. Clause 15, there were no issues which were raised there and we didn't make any other additional amendments. On now, clause 16, there were no issues which were raised there for both 1 and 2. Now we are on page 9 on clause 17. On clause 17 there, no, there was no issue which was raised here. The only thing which somebody was commenting on, which we didn't deal with it, somebody wanted us to talk about the issue of someone. But that is the New Spark Systems Act. It's not the issue. Once you start doing those things, it will start creating confusion. And that is the reason we did not make any amendment. On clause 18, here again, there were no issues here. Yeah, there were no issues which were raised. On clause 19, this will have to be redacted because when we had deliberations with the committee yesterday, our understanding that there was a principal agreement to the concept of a differentiation, that the current validity of the road before remains for metropolitan municipalities, so whatever we are eating, it will be for local municipalities but not for metro. So that, if that is agreed, then the legal drafters will have to draft it to give effect to that policy decision. Okay. On clause
What's your time amount to that section a little bit more as well? I'll see it when it comes back. But I'm not agreeing to it.
On clause 20, what is the thing on 20 by the way? amendment. What's the main issue here? Nothing. Okay, on COP 21, nothing but raise the rest of both A and B. On COP 22, I'm on page 10, on COP 22, yeah, this is the deliberations we had yesterday regarding the issue of mining rights. And the argument is that what is underlined, we take it out, because that is what was creating confusion. So what we were proposing to amend, which is what I already, it says that the value of any license, permission, or other,
32A.
On cost 22. It says that Section 46 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution subsection 2 of paragraph A of the following paragraph. A, the value of any license, permission, or other privilege granted in terms of legislation in relation to the program. So it should stop there.
Mm.
If it stops there, all the issues which people had were not, and we agreed to that. On clause 23, I think there was no issue here.
No.
Okay. On clause 56, it's good, I'll never get to
finish.
No, I didn't take Red Bull. That's the problem. on clause 24, let me see here. There was nothing here. On clause 25, here the issue is the committee. We added here this issue of professional valuers because the professional associated valuers, because the DAB at the moment, the only there is a requirement that at least one member should be a professional valuer. So we were proposing to amend the thing to read that the evaluation appeal box must have blah blah blah, but not fewer than two and not more than four members with sufficient knowledge of or experience in the valuation of property, of which at least one must be a professional valuer or a professional associated valuer without restrictions and with at least 10 years experience. That is what yesterday morning's deliberations was upon. Whether the professional associated valuer is taken out of the amendment, in which case it will mean it will retain the current status quo of the Act.
Based on the deliberation, did we not say we can just retain the status quo?
No.
Oh, no.
That's what I was
saying. I'm agreeing that we put in the associate valuer.
Yeah, because at the end, remember, Honorable Smith came and said, well, if we take this thing, are we not running into problems if the council, for whatever reason, does it, that the same problem remains? So initially, that is where it was going, but it came at the better part to raise the issue that United States is better, that the thing is included.
I disagree for reasons I've raised there. I think it's their law to have people sitting in adjudication of others who are less qualified than them.
So the committee is to provide us with a direction that we will be drafting the proposal.
But
if
that's not coming from the problem that is currently existing, the associates were brought in because of the problem being experienced of not having valuators. Can't we bring in something about the ratio? Because at the same time, we need the skills, we're struggling, but we'll need to open up the door in order for people to get qualified and to get this experience. Couldn't we say something that the majority of the board members should be in the profession? And the, I don't know, I'm just throwing it out there.
The problem with that, Madam Chair, is that if you look at the clause in toto, it says four other members with sufficient knowledge or experience in the valuation of property. Doesn't mean they have to have ever been a valuer, doesn't mean they ever have any professional qualification. The only qualification that you have on that person is that single person. And given the fact that the department, that the council is now giving a moratorium period where people are able to, you know, get that qualification. My fear is that what's left behind afterwards, the professional associated value or category, is going to be those people who just simply couldn't get that qualification, even with the moratorium. And you're then going to have them adjudicating decisions made by professional valuers. And remember, I said yesterday that this is the last port of call. But you and I, people who don't have endless money, we can't go to court after this. It's too expensive. We can live with the decision of this board. But that's just my concern.
But the report then that let's park it, and also maybe on Monday to evaluate, because the presentation that I made yesterday, that I asked for the valuers, they asked, I mean, they were comfortable when we were saying we must add the associate. Explaining the duration of their training and their course, saying that you call the association of the valuer, the only remaining course to complete or maybe to graduate is to do practical. So I suppose that let's pack it. Maybe on Monday invite one or two of those valuers, because some of them are saying yes, get some. So that they give us a last explanation whether, but on that day it is sounded comfortable. Tuesday. Huh? Yeah, we agree on that, and let's have it until all of us we get the explanation that we have, because I thought maybe it's still the student while they are saying no, it's the person who is on the field. Who is possible to have this 10-year experience? It's just that he needs to go one step ahead and graduate.
And sometimes experience, a lot of people
go to the
experience. So let's pass this one. On those 26, there was nothing there which came up. And on those 27, again, that is graduation related thing. Again, we did not make any amendment. What I said is that when we talk about the issues about closing date for the graduation board and all those things, it's later for this particular section in which we didn't make any We were on page 11, and for those 27, we said that there was no issue, but we indicated that most of the things are related to issues around the request. We will explain why we didn't take those things into account. Now we move to page
27. This is page 27. I don't know if I've got an old version, but I couldn't find the all in section 27A.
Those are the things that we are aware of.
And then just secondly, Africa raised an issue around the confusion here in this particular clause between the duties ascribed to the municipal manager and the municipal valuer. So it was unclear. Whereas the law placed obligation on the municipal manager to sustain the municipal valuer, and they indicated it could be confusing about who they are accountable at the end of the day for notifying and informing landowners of their evaluation.
That was raised indeed. We didn't take that proposal. Reason being, we think we should retain it as municipal valuer in section 78, because the Act already has provisions in terms of, say, the general valuation role. When the general valuation role is out for public comment, and when property owners object, it is the municipal valuer who deals with all the objections. the municipal valuer lets the owners know about those things. The municipal valuer tells the owners about the decision on their objections. So all we're doing here is we're carrying on the principles in the Act. It doesn't mean that the municipal manager doesn't take accountability. The municipal valuer has an internal obligation to refer matters to the municipal manager internally, but the municipal valuer engages with property owners on the valuation issues. So we're just keeping what is in the Act, what the Act allows, so we didn't make any change.
Right. Yeah. Okay. With that, now I'm on top 28. And the issue there is subsection 1, where in terms of the condemnation for non-compliance with certain issues, we are now limiting it to municipalities. And the deliberations happen on that, including the reason as to why we feel that the other the ordinary citizens should not be allowed to be subject to the condemnation to an MEC.
So I'm not so sure whether there was a consensus or not from this committee. I can't say what was wrong.
Okay, Will. At least so you are taking note of that. Section 81. Clause 29. Yeah. Clause 29, we explained that today, but I will quickly recap here what we proposed to the committee, and we thought that there was an agreement with what we proposed. On the first part, which relates to on page 12 of the rule of, if we are not proposing any amendment to that, then on page 13 at the top again, there is no amendment to that, because like we said, the main problem which came there was, the only comment was in relation to 82D, which was titled reporting to MEC by municipalities. Now what we suggested yesterday was today, when you look at the page, what we suggested there was to retain under A2E, A, B, C, D, E, and we delete F, G, H, I, J, and A. So L will remain there. And then we take in H2D, A2D, we take number one, which was number one, we plot it as a new F on H13 at the top, because it relates to the other things there.
We
It will become on the top of page 3.
It will become F.
Yeah, under 1G, we've got A, B, C, D, E, it will become a new F. Yeah. Because it's linked to the reporting by municipalities to MECs. Then, which means under H2B, what will remain? Is to retain to the title which says reporting to MEC by municipalities, it will change to reporting to minister by MECs, and each and subsection 2 then will remain. This one is, you guys will do the account by MEC. So,
two
D
one
yes.
And then two, that's two remaining two.
Now on, can I move to the next page 14? On page 14, in page 1, there was nothing there which was raised. Agreed.
Yeah.
There was nothing raised. Same with respect to clause 32. Same with respect to clause 33. Except people being happy about what we're doing there with regard to some of the transitional arrangements relating to municipal boundary. Now I'm on page 15. On page 15 with respect to clause 34, and we took the committee as to what we proposed there, which was, we need to refer to the other document on page 6 of it, on page 6, because what we recommended to the committee yesterday is that after looking at the comments from the public hearing, we will regard it as it is on page 6, which replaces the rule of that. Official rate, it will see that 90. This is the result of the rigid determination of the municipal boundary in terms of the local government, municipal organization, S1998, blah, blah, blah. An area is included in the existing area of jurisdiction of the municipality during the course of the financial year. That is what we are aiming there. That municipality made during that financial year in which the inclusion becomes effective and subsequent financial year, and he could have evaluation on a supplemental evaluation on that includes such area. A, continue to use a rating policy and bylaws. So we added bylaws that was enforced in the area that has been included in this area of jurisdiction. And B, deliberate consistent with that rating policy and bylaw. So we included the things to take into account some of the things which the public comments were raising. Now on clause 85, there was nothing there. On clause 36, again, it will take us to page 7 of this other document, which is what we explained to the committee yesterday, and I'll read it quickly. What will happen there is giving effect to what Johannesburg, the top Johannesburg, recommended about the phasing out, because we provided only for 3 years, to take it to 5 years, and it will read as follows. The prohibition on the living rate on public service infrastructure refers to Section 21, Section 8, must be phased in over a period of 5 years from financial years with effect from the date of commencement of the Act. Two, the rate levied on property referred to in Subsection 1 must aim in the first year to no more than 80% of the rate for that year otherwise applicable to the property. B, in the second year to no more than 60% of the rate for that year otherwise applicable to the property. C, in the third year to be no more than 40%. D, in the fourth year be no more than 20%. And E, in the fifth year, be no more than 10% of the rate for that year, otherwise applicable to that product. So that is what we have done to come back to the issue of phasing out of the rating of public service infrastructure over 5 years. Well, that is what already we explained to the committee. Okay. Okay. Now, the next item is a minor thing which the draft will do, right? It's changing 2013 to 2014. Now the only thing before the chair of the committee put me out is the issue of the preamble which we raised in from this discussion today which we have. Whether the committee wants us to add into this issue or about it, where we said that in the bill we were published for public comment earlier on in order to take out these things about people making services to property rating. We had it saying that already said that the preamble to the Local Government Municipal Property Rates Act 2004, herein after referred to as the Principal Act, is hereby amended by the substitution for the fourth paragraph of the following paragraph. It reads, and whereas income derived from property rates is a metaphor of general municipal revenue, and that revenue is not linked to a specific municipal service or the erection of infrastructure related to that municipal service. So we just wanted to make him wonder whether we get the thing into the game or not. But it follows from the last discussion which we had.
Yes, I see my worry about it if you put it in.
Yeah.
It's going to be legal challenge or legal challenge to this bill.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get a Supreme Court ballot.
Okay, fine. So, no, this is fine. We can take it out. I was just bringing...
Nothing for David Lee and
Okay. So... In conclusion, Chelsea, as a department, we think that as not possible. Because we have this field to go to the authorities and the citizens are waiting for, we got challenged. Now, you said that I can go and get something to eat. You will ask me regarding sausage. Regarding sausage. As to how the committee deals with that. But the rest of that. So can I go and get my head to why you deal with it?
I don't know why all the difficult things are left to me. Chair, I think you should really rule on this one.
No, I mean,
clearly there's quite a lot of deliberation about Section 8, and the committee is going to have to determine where it stands in this regard. As we said, we felt it was open-ended enough. We've given the committee, we feel, all the information and all the legal considerations that we can give. So, we haven't made any amendments to Section 8 based on the submissions that we received for the reasons that we put forth. And I think this morning as well, it was reiterated quite clearly that things like privately owned towns don't necessarily have to be incorporated in Section 8. Our proposal was that we leave it as is, so the committee is going to have to take the decision based on that.
I think we should pass this one. I think there's a compromise on the offering, and I think that you guys should come back with a compromise. I know you guys. You've got a compromise. There's always a compromise. On Section 8. I want to see what it looks like. Then we can have a discussion here.
And
I'm supposed to qualify,
but also between me and
her,
I don't know.
Can I tell the problem? They forget to deal with politicians. Politicians aren't only here in the direction. You've got to get behind you, across from you, there.
We'll see on Tuesday how that is going.
Okay. We'll go back and repeat. If there is something which we can do, we will do it. We will do it. If we have that, then the committee will also have to assist us. But we'll go and
do it. Well, I mean, maybe if you could spend some time with Salzer as well. If you get them on board with whatever compromises, it can make life a lot easier.
I think that they deliberated with it even at midnight level. But do you have our
support? I'm not ruled by my chief here. They already say there is no compromise.
I'll take on for consultation.
No compromise. No, we'll do it whenever that's what it is today. The committee there is in other option we'll show on the table.
Chairperson, when we just want to check for our flight arrangements. It looks like it's difficult to get a bed in Cape Town these days. When is the meeting? We have no bed tonight. We want to stay on. No bed. We struggled for the last 2 days. For everywhere. But is the meeting on Tuesday and Wednesday? We meet on Tuesday and Wednesday. Okay.
Honourable members, our house had this committee, the next week was not supposed to meet, but we closed it up in a bad way, because we need to arrange our dresses, our dress code. So we're meeting. All these years we're not meeting. This is going to be... All the committees are not meeting. So, it's great that but like, you know what I understand, next week we're not going to meet. I have to go to the house. Thanks, members. Thanks. It's a very energetic society. Yeah. I'm happy that the ethics minister was here. If he was here during this exercise, I know he's short tempered. But the minister man was gonna go in and out, asking for coca. Thanks for this deliberation. The meeting is adjourned.
I don't